legislature. I provide you a letter expressing the reason for my veto. I enclose a statement posted to the governor's website in response to the Facebook post. That statement is as follows. My views on the asset forfeiture bill are set forth in my veto letter to the Senate president. That said, it is appropriate to scrutinize existing law, which my veto leaves intact, and there has been much scrutiny, as there should be, by legislators, interested groups, and the public. An executive branch official's impugning of others for a position taken on a bill is wrong, dead wrong, and the offending remarks should be removed from the public domain. They certainly do not reflect my views. Clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Allen. Baker.
Here.
Baldwin.
Here.
Barlow.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blackburn.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Burkhart. Burkhart. Bird. Campbell,
here.
Kennedy,
here.
Clem,
here.
Connolly,
here.
Dayton,
here.
Edmonds,
here.
Edwards,
here.
Eklund,
here.
Esquibel, Esquibel, Freeman,
here.
Gay,
here.
Greer,
here.
Halverson,
here.
Harshman,
here.
Harvey,
here.
Hunt,
here.
Yagi,
here.
Jennings,
here.
Kasparik,
here.
Kirkbride,
here.
Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Larson Lloyd,
here.
Larson Dan,
here.
Lindholm,
here.
Lockhart,
here.
Laux,
here.
Madden,
here.
McKim,
here.
Miller,
here.
Moniz,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Northrup,
here.
Patton excused, Paxton,
here.
Pelkey,
here.
Petrov,
here.
Piperinen,
here.
Pinnell,
here.
Reeder,
here.
Schwartz,
here.
Summers,
here.
Steinmetz,
here.
Stubson,
here.
Throne,
here.
Walters,
here.
Wilson,
here.
Winters,
here.
Swanitzer Dan,
here.
Swanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Allen,
here.
Burkhart,
here.
Esquibel, Esquibel,
here.
Esquibel excused, 58 present, 2 excused.
The prayer for the day is offered by Reverend Elizabeth Wilson, representing First Presbyterian Church in Cheyenne.
And let us pray. Lord, please keep this nation and state under your care today. Bless the leaders of our state that we may be a people at peace among ourselves and a blessing to other states around us. Help us today to contribute wise decisions for our constituents and thus serve them faithfully. Give us, O Lord, a reverence for the truth and the desire both to think and speak truly. Save us from all fear of truth. Be with us as we make important decisions today. Almighty God, we ask you to draw our hearts to you, so guide our minds and fill our imaginations of all possibilities of governance of this great state. We ask you to be with each one of us today as we do the work that is set before us. Use us as you will, always to the glory and welfare of your people, through our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to give you an update on our good friend and Representative John Patton. I went to visit him this morning. He will be released from the hospital today, but he will not be coming back yet. He's got a little bit of rehab to go through, but he does send his good greetings to you and best of luck today on third reading. I tried to give him an update. He wishes he could be here to help you do the heavy lifting, but he and Jen, his wife and son Jack, thank you for your love, your prayers, your visits, and hopes to be back soon. So thank you.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, may I introduce a friend of mine?
You may. Please proceed.
A young man sitting over here that's a friend of mine. His name is William Shade, and he's the page of the day. And he's a kid that doesn't sit around a whole lot and watch a lot of TV. He's got so many activities. I'm going to share a few of them with you. He lives in Orlando with his folks, John and Amanda Shade. He's a fifth grader. He is accomplished in violin and guitar. He also helps out as a junior musher with Jerry Bath and training his mushing dogs. He has poultry that he raises in the 4-H, and he has a turkey that went to the state fair. He plays football, baseball, and basketball. He also is involved in the Mountain Men Rendezvous, and he won first place in his division of the state fair for muzzle loading. And I just want you to give him a good round of applause. He's going to be helping us today. He's accompanied by his father, John, and his grandmother, Joyce, up there in the balcony. And let's give him a warm welcome to this house.
Well, welcome to the house. If you see any turkeys running around here today, I'll ask you to help me with them. Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, privilege.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In our south gallery, to your right, we have the president of Eastern Wyoming Community Eastern Wyoming College from Torrington, Dr. Rick Patterson.
Welcome to the house. Okay. Journal report.
Your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 18, 2015 has been read and recommends it be approved, signed by Representative Schwartz and Steinmetz.
The doctor of the day is Joseph Ken from Cheyenne, and the nurse of the day is Jo Lynn Ray from Wyoming Medical Center in Casper. Please welcome them to the house. You were born ready, huh? Ladies and gentlemen, it's a special privilege today to welcome Senator Mike Enzi to the Wyoming Legislature. Senator Enzi served in this House, in this body, from 1987 to 1991, and also served in the Wyoming Senate from 1992 to 1996. He was sworn in the United States Senate in 1997 and has been serving the people of Wyoming there ever since. He's currently chairman of the U.S. Senate's Committee on Budget, and serves as a member of the Committee on Finance, Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship, and Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs. Please help me in welcoming to the House United States Senator Mike Enzi.
Was on. It's always good to be back in the House. It's a little more rambunctious than the Senate. And I remember sitting right back there and primarily using the microphone there in the back, but Diane and I are pleased to be here and like to make this annual visit so I can see fellow legislators actually legislating. Good work. And I think today you're probably on the budget, which of course is now one of my favorite topics. I'm able to bore them with numbers now, and then when they're asleep, you can get a lot done. But I'm the only accountant to ever chair the budget committee. And the lawyers just kind of did shoebox accounting, so I'm trying to straighten out 6 years' worth of records since the last time that we did a budget. We go ahead and do the spending anyway. We've got things that we haven't even authorized that we're still spending on. And I'm trying to help people understand a little bit more about what shape the federal government's in. We don't balance our budget every year like you do. I wish we did. And I'm trying to put us on a course where we can do that. But they keep telling us that it's okay as long as the gross national product is within 80% of what we're spending. Well, pretty quick it's going to be 100%, and that's not good. That'd be like Greece. But that's the gross national product is actually what the private sector produces in this country. And every time that we put some more requirements on the private sector in this country, we drive that number down. Now, if we could raise that number by just 1%, over 10 years, that'd be $4 trillion. That would more than balance our budget. But so far, we're not doing anything to increase that gross national product. And I really shouldn't talk about $4 trillion. Right now, what we're getting to make decisions on is $1.1 trillion. But anytime you're talking about numbers under 10, it doesn't sound like much money. So 4 trillion is 4,000 billion. And 1.1 trillion that we get to make the decisions on is $1,100 billion. Now, here's the really stunning part of that. We spend $1,100 billion that we get to make decisions on. We overspend. They call that deficit. I like to call it overspending because that's really what it is. If you call it deficit, they confuse it with debt. We got a lot of debt, and the deficit drives up the debt. But it's the overspending that drives up that debt. The overspending in that $1,100 billion is $468 billion. Yeah, it's easy to balance it. You just cut half of what everything we do. No, nobody likes any cuts in government. They will complain about a cut in the increase. And you know that from the budgets that you work on, that if you cut the amount of increase, that was a cut in what they expected to get. But we're facing some really serious problems in Washington because last year we spent $231 billion on interest on the national debt. Interest doesn't buy anything. Dave Ramsey will tell you that. And all of you know that already. But that's at 1%. Now imagine it was just $200 billion that we spent, and then it goes from 1% to 5%. Yeah, that's $1,000 billion, and we only have $1,100 billion that we get to make decisions on. We wouldn't be able to fund defense, or education, or health, or anything else. So we do have to get control of it, and I'm working on that, and I'm optimistic. Not in the short term, of course. If I can get a budget that balances by April 15th, and that's the statutory deadline, but I'll be one of the first to ever reach that if I get that done. We have to balance it by within 10 years. I can come up with a 10-year plan, unless I can sell a penny plan. And I hope you'll help me sell the penny plan. Under the penny plan, we just spend 1 cent less of every dollar that the federal government spends, and it balances the budget in 3 years. And we actually need to do better than that, but I can't come up with anything better than that. But I'm trying to sell that, and I'm gaining some ground on it. Now, I really appreciate the way that you handle the finances for the state of Wyoming. This is the most solid state in the nation for that. It's the most business-friendly state in the nation, and it's the best-run state in the nation. And I'm proud of all of those things. And the only thing that worries me is you do have some reserve funds, and the federal government's looking for money all the time. That's what happened on AML. You know, that was a federal trust fund where they were holding this money in trust for Wyoming. And you can't trust a federal trust fund. When I got there, I asked, you know, how come we don't get any of this money? And they said, well, to get money, you got to put money in. That's bonds in a drawer. It's a promise by the federal government to pay. So, see, that's more debt. That's more accounts payable. But here's the scary thing. That's Social Security as well. That's bonds in a drawer. That's accounts payable. That's a promise to pay. That's not money. There is no money in the drawer. And so we have a lot of those trust funds, which means that the debt's actually a lot higher than what we're talking about. So I am trying to get the AML money back, and it's a trust fund, so we ought to be able to do that. But it's a tough sell when the rest of the states don't have any money. There's also a private pension fund out there, and we've stolen the money from it for highways. And I'm trying to get some restoration done in the meantime. But I know that's not the main things on your worries. You've got a lot of things, and this is getting down to the last days, and there's a lot of tension and everything. And one of the things I want to suggest is on a really tense day, we hold the National Prayer Breakfast, which is the Senate and the House getting together once a year. We meet weekly when we're in session separately. And then once a year we come together and we invite another 3,000 people. And the speaker this year was a NASCAR driver. Darrell Waldrop was the speaker. And if you go online to National Prayer Breakfast 2015, you can see his speech. And it's a tremendous journey of faith and encouragement for people to get along. And that might help through your session. I've had the privilege, because of the prayer breakfasts, to go to some other countries. I went to the Congo. And, you know, there's still war going on over in the Congo. And we met with the parliament at Goma, and they had heard of our prayer breakfast. We don't try to sell our prayer breakfast, but we're more than happy to talk about it. And we did. And they started a prayer breakfast right there while we were there. They wanted us to do one with them. And as soon as we left that meeting, the administration had heard that we did something special with the parliament. And they said, you got to come over and tell us what you did. So we went over and told them. They said, well, we want to start one too. And that was 7 years ago, and those prayer breakfasts are still going on, and they report to us annually on the things that it's doing to help straighten out their country. But I also was doing a prayer breakfast in South Africa, and after we did they had apartheid there, and it kind of tore the country apart, and now they have a mixed parliament, and it's working okay, partly because of the prayer breakfast. We did finish the prayer breakfast, and then we had a little discussion of how we could help each other out. One of the things I suggested was, why don't you tell us what your issues are, and we'll tell you what our issues are, and we can pray for those. And a great big guy named Paul said, no. You pray for the people, and the people will solve the issues. So pray for each other during these difficult times, and you'll be able to solve every issue that's there. I also mentioned the 80% rule that I came up with when I was in the Wyoming legislature. That can help sometimes through these times too. And the way that really works is that I've found that you can talk civilly about 80% of the issues. Or 10% we're always going to clash on. But if you stick to the 80%, and incidentally this will work with your spouses and with your friends. You probably know some topics that if you bring them up you're going to have a lively discussion, achieve nothing, and maybe hurt some feelings. Well, that's the way it works with legislation, too, as you know. So you stick to that 80%. You can probably find an issue or two or five or 20 or 39 that you can actually agree on 80%. And, again, what it requires is not compromise. I hate the word compromise. That means that you give up half of what you believe in, I give up half of what I believe in, and we wind up with something nobody believes in. But if we take those 10% issues from each side and we leave them out, we can get all the rest of it done. And I really think that's what the American people expect us to do and what the people of Wyoming expect you to do. And so I hope you can use the 80% rule and continue in the magnificent way that Wyoming legislatures have always done to make this the best state in the nation. Thanks for your service.
On behalf of the Wyoming Legislature, we thank you, Senator Enzi, for your service to Wyoming and the United States Senate, and appreciate the update on your work in Washington. And thanks also to your wife, Diane, for being here. I think sometimes she doesn't get enough credit. Reports from standing committees.
Senate file, Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 58, engrossed State Park Officers-Benefits, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 59, Wyoming Public Television Endowment Accounts, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, and Stepson. One no vote, Representative Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 57, engrossed School Facilities Appropriations, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Paxton, Piperina, Summers, Throne. One no vote, Representative Yeagy. One excuse, Representative Patton, signed by Representative Northrop, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 101, engrossed Veterans in State Tuition, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Yeagy, Northrop, Paxton, Piperina, Somers, and Throne. One excuse, Representative Patton, signed by Representative Northrop, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 51, Water Development Amendments, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Yeagy, Larson, Lindholm, and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 55, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Yeagy, Larson, Lindholm, and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 44, Large Project Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz. One no vote, Representative Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 62, Oral Chemotherapy Parity, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, and Schwartz, four no votes, Representatives Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 119, Hospice Respite Care, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Re-referrals. Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer Senate File 51, Water Development Amendments, and Senate File 55, the Omnibus Water Bill Planning, to your Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Senate File 61 and Senate File 55 are re-referred to Appropriations Committee Number 2. Chairman Petroff, do you maybe have a re-referral on Senate File 44, possibly?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to re-refer Senate File 44 to Committee Number 2 Appropriations.
Senate File 44 is re-referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations. Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer Senate File 57 to Appropriations.
Senate File 57 is re-referred to Appropriations Committee Number 2. We're now at that order of business of request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number 254 on House Bill 104, Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for concurrence on message 254 for House Bill 104. And if you'll recall, this is a bill that was about if someone's unable to use their big or trophy game license, that they could reserve that license for the following year. And so the difference between the House and Senate versions is that the House version said that the Game and Fish Department could issue an administrative cost not to exceed the cost of the initial license. The Senate version changed it to not less than $10 and not to exceed 4% of the initial license. I've talked to the sponsor of the bill, and he is happy with this Senate amendment, and so I would encourage your aye vote.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 104. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen, Baker, Baldwin, Barlow, Berger, Blackburn, Blake, Burkhart, Byrd, Campbell, Kennedy, Clem, Connolly, Dayton, Edmonds, Edwards, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Greer, Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Yagi, Jennings, Kasparic, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton excused, Paxton, Pelkey, Petroff, Piperinen, Pinnell, Reeder, Schwartz, Summers, Steinmetz, Stubson, Throne, Walters, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Edmonds. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Greer, aye to no. Burkhart, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Hunt, aye to no. McKim, aye to no. Jennings, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 51 aye, 8 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 104. The next message for our consideration is message number 255 on House Bill 74, Chairman Zwanzer Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message 255 to House Bill 74 and ask for your no vote. What happened in the other body, we came up with a brilliant amendment over on this side, and they have deleted the second half of it. So it has to do with the front license plate bill that we heard over here in this committee. And so what they want to do is just leave it in so it would say that a motor vehicle which was originally manufactured without a bracket device or other means of display and secure front license plate and put a period on it. What the situation is that a lot of them are manufactured without the license plate bracket, but they are all readily available. And so we would like to go back and talk to them about this and say, hey, you know, if they're readily available, we need to put that back in. And so I would ask for your no vote.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to push back gently on this a little bit, mostly because everybody got a purple piece of paper with a flyer saying not to concur. But I just want you to read what it says. Right now, the main amendment that they changed, what it's saying right now is a motor vehicle which was originally manufactured without a bracket, device, or other means to display and secure a front license plate. And so, period. So that, to me, that pretty well says what we're saying. So if there's or other means, that just continues on. So then what we want to maybe add back, and it's up to the body here, and the manufacturer of the motor vehicle provided no other means or method to display and secure a front license plate. So the way it is right now from the Senate is how I originally had it. We amended it in the House, and I just put it up to you. If that's what we want to do, have a conference committee, then so be it. But I think we're splitting hairs on this one. The first part essentially says what the second part says also. So let your conscience be your guide.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My concern with concurring on this is the fact that there's probably more cars sold by manufacturers into one license plate states than two license plate states when you consider population. And for that reason, they don't have a front bracket that is going to be affixed when it comes out of the factory. But they do have holes in them, and they do show you where to put the holes if you want to have one. So, you know, you can see why they do that. They do it to appease the biggest share of the market. And I think this is just an example of the unintended future consequences when we have a bill like this. We're trying to soften it up and weaken it so we're ultimately a one license plate state. So I urge you not to concur with this.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I happen to have a vehicle that falls in this category. And there is an aftermarket bracket that you can buy for that front license plate that hangs underneath the front of the automobile, but that's $254. So if we don't concur with this and it goes back to the language they added, if they produce these automobiles that don't have a front license plate, but it says if there's a bracket available, you have to purchase one, just think how much they can charge for those brackets by not putting a front license plate bracket on there. So I would urge your aye vote for this. Thank you.
Anyone else before the chairman? Chairman's answer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The main reason that we have these front license plates are for law enforcement to be able to catch, you know, the bad guys. And the original intent of the bill, as I understood it when it came, was to allow for those vehicles that are specifically manufactured in the very high price range, and they're not readily available to get a bracket to be able to exclude those. And with the amendment, as we did on the House side, does that. If we leave it the way that the other body has it, you know, for a while they didn't even put bumpers on pickups, much less the brackets. So we're going to be able, in my opinion, to allow everybody or a large segment of the population to find a way around having to put that front license plate on. And I think it's very important that we have that on all those vehicles possible. So I would ask for your no vote.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 74. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds. Edwards,
aye.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Kasparic.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton excused. Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
Aye.
Pennell.
No.
Reeder.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Steinmetz. No to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 38 aye, 21 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 74. We're now at that order of business of consideration of Joint Conference Committee reports. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Report on House Bill 16, Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move message number 222, the Joint Conference Committee on House Bill 16. As you recall on this bill, the older gentleman across the way here in the Capitol, I don't know if they fell asleep or whatever. All we did with this part of the bill was move some existing statute into another newly created part under the notary laws. They didn't like that, so they struck all the new language but left the repealer in. And all we're doing here is striking the repealer in the original bill, so it leaves the statute right where it was. So they saw our wisdom eventually. It was quite an argument for a while. We did finally get them all woken up, and we agreed to do this. So I ask for your aye vote.
We're voting on Joint Conference Committee message number 222 on House Bill 16. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kasparic. Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton excused. Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff. Pieperinen.
Aye.
Pennell.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Throne. Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you've adopted Joint Conference Committee number 222 report on House Bill 16. We're now at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 6 from Senator Burns, an act relating to aquatic invasive species.
Senate File 6 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 10 from the Education Committee, an act relating to government administration.
Senate File 10, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 12. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 12 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
There are amendments. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number one and ask for your favorable consideration. When we talked about this bill yesterday, the standing committee amendment had taken the fine down to $1,000 from $5,000. There was enough discussion in our committee proceedings that I thought I'd bring forth this amendment to raise the fine back up. As we learned talking about this bill, this is more than trespassing. This is theft of data, theft of property. And a lot of us think that this is worthy of a $5,000 fine, taking it one step above a high misdemeanor, and I urge your aye vote.
Representative Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, and the argument in the committee was, yeah, this is a crime, but we have a lot of crimes on the books, and we have a lot of first offense crimes, and we have a lot of crimes that are just as serious or in many ways more serious than this type of crime. And the example that I brought up is this type of trespass more serious than a domestic battery. And I think we need to have some uniformity in our criminal code. I think we need to have a systematic approach to how we handle first offenses under our criminal code. And as a result of that, I think a high misdemeanor is appropriate in this matter. And it should be a one-year, $1,000 violation. So on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the arguments we heard in committee was that some of the individuals and some of the groups that are committing these chronic trespasses have more money and time and are the $1,000 is no deterrent. I ask for your aye vote.
We're voting on second reading amendment number one, House to Senate File 12. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number one has failed. We're now on second reading amendment number two. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move second reading amendment number two to the Senate File 12. If you'll remember, we had an amendment yesterday that deleted or crosses private property, and that was defeated. But the at the bottom of that that amendment was just a definition at page 3, line 20, that defines the word collect. And so, and I ran this amendment by the originator of this bill over on the other side of the building, and he's agreeable with it. And so basically it is a parameter of exactly what this data is and what collect means. So if there's not any questions, I would call for your favorable vote.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Cohn, for your first time. Croker, I'm sorry. Why do I always do that? Representative Croker, please, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a quick question, and I'm wondering why we're limiting this to the state or federal government. What if they're intending it to give it to a group that's going to, publicly go after the guy or sue him or something like that? So I'm wondering if we need to broaden that side of it.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are probably other entities we could add to that, and we could fix that on a third reading. So, thanks.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 12. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Second reading amendment number 2 has failed. Division being called. All in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Second reading amendment number 2 has failed. We're now on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 12. Mr. Speaker, Representative, Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a joint effort between myself and the good Speaker Pro Tem. At least once a session, we do try to get together on something. But this requested change was brought to us by a former speaker. Apparently, former speakers do not just ride off into the sunset. They actually listen to what we do. This is a simple change. It doesn't really change the intent of the bill. I think it makes it cleaner. As we discussed yesterday, there are sometimes split estate issues where the mineral estate is owned by somebody different than the surface owner. In addition, there can also be surface owner disputes where you might have multiple heirs to a property. And so to deal with those multitudes of situations, this amendment makes a simple change, and I haven't moved the amendment, Mr. Speaker. Let me do that. Mr. Speaker, I would like to move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 12 and ask for your favorable consideration. Getting back to the amendment, it simply clarifies that if you have an ownership interest in the real property, you're included in that category of folks who have a right to enter. And I think that's basically the law, but I think there was a little lack of clarity in this. And so on page 2, line 6, it makes that change. In page 2, line 18, it makes that change. And then similar language is added on page 5, line 2. And it's just to deal with the different ownership interests that you can find in complex property situations.
Representative Halverson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the bringer of this amendment for that explanation. Not being an attorney, I was a little confused, but I am assured that this is indeed a friendly amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Question being called. We're voting on, I'm sorry, Madam Minority Floor Leader, do you want to have your last say?
Mr. Speaker, if there aren't any questions, I'll just call for the question.
Great. Question being called. We're voting on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 12. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 12 has passed. Senate File 12, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, please.
It's with great honor and distinction today that I would like to introduce a friend and a past member of this body, Representative Barbara Cuban. Please join me in welcoming her.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much. I just want to say that it was really the honor of my life serving in this body, and the relationships and the friends that I made here make me so proud. And what makes me even prouder is to be from a citizen from the state that is the best operating state in the union. And it makes me so proud to be from here. And thank you for your work. It's just wonderful to not be doing it anymore. But it's wonderful to be here and see you guys doing it. Thank you for your work and your service.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 20. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 20 from the Education Committee, an act relating to school finance.
Senate File 20 having been read two separate times, the question is shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 23. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 23 from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to enhanced oil and gas recovery.
Senate File 23 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 25.
Senate File 25 from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to prioritization of municipal solid waste facilities cease and transfer projects.
Senate File 25 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 31.
Senate File 31 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to the administration of government.
Senate File 31 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 33. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 33 from Corporations, an act relating to elections.
There is an amendment. Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number one, the Senate File 33, and would ask for your favorable consideration. You'll remember on Committee of the Whole yesterday, we talked about a situation where you could get two write-in people who would tie, and even though there'd be someone else on the ballot, you'd still have to turn all that information over, and it might cause some confusion. And so we went back and talked to our county clerks and the Secretary of State's office and came up with a solution that all of the information for all the write-ins would just go directly to the party chairman. And so as you all know, there are now four major parties in Wyoming, and we started thinking of ramifications and situations and said at the end of the day it's just best to turn all of that information over to the county party chairman of each of the major parties in each county. And that was workable and agreeable by all parties. So I'd be happy to answer any questions or recall for the question at this time.
Discussion on the amendment. Hearing none on the question being called, we're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate File 33. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one has passed. Senate File 33 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 34. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 34 from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to mines and mining.
Senate File 34 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 35.
Senate File 35 from the Corporations Committee, an act relating to consumer protection.
Senate File 35 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 36.
Senate File 36 from the Corporations, an act relating to crimes and offenses and consumer protection.
Senate File 36 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 37.
Senate File 37 from Corporations, an act relating to administration of government.
Senate File 37 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, if so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 38.
Senate File 38 from Senator Case, an act relating to controlled substances.
Senate File 38 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 46.
Senate File 46 from Senator Geis, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
Senate File 46 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 60.
Senate File 60 from Appropriations, an act relating to deferred compensation plan.
Senate File 60 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 63.
Senate File 63 from Senator Anderson, an act relating to predatory animals.
Senate File 63 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 64.
Senate File 64 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act.
Senate File 64 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 70.
Senate File 70 from Senator Doc Stater, an act relating to public utilities.
Senate File 70 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be heard a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 94.
Senate File 94 from Senator Christensen, an act relating to driving or having control of a vehicle while under the influence of intoxicating liquor or controlled substances.
Senate File 94 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 102.
Senate File 102 from Senator Landon, an act relating to Medicaid.
Senate File 102, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 117.
Senate File 117 from Senator Bubout, an act relating to environmental quality.
Senate File 117, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 2.
Senate Joint Resolution 2 from Appropriations, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to authorize investment of state funds.
Senate Joint Resolution 2 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
While we have this short pause, can
yes,
I
would
get
you
a quick,
like to fill up a little dead air here?
Yes, can I get a quick privilege to the floor?
Please proceed.
Members of the 63rd, I would like to welcome my little baby sister, Kara Scholl, and her son, Grady, to the House today. The only blemish on Kara's character is that she lives in Colorado. Otherwise, she's a really good person. But anyway, welcome them to the House, please.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege.
Please.
Folks, behind you in the galleries, we have some of the kids from Robert Munger's 8th grade civic class from Newcastle Middle School. And with them is their middle school principal, Mr. Todd Quigley. So this is the first group, as I understand, and the second half of them are currently taking a tour of the building. So they'll be dropping by later. But welcome, guys.
Welcome to the House. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to let you know, you just got a couple of sets of amendments, 38 and 39. The first one came stapled, 38 stapled to 39. So you could just toss that if you'd like, and then there's separate 38 and 39. They're both wonderful amendments, but you don't need them all. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And just to add to that, there's one more amendment, number 41, coming, and when it comes, I will announce where it goes in the batting order. So look for one more, and I will make that announcement. Okay, we're now in that order of business of bills on third and final reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 1. There are amendments.
House Bill number 1 from Appropriations, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government, increasing or decreasing certain amounts, adjusting the number of authorized positions, modifying prior appropriations, making additional appropriations, making certain appropriations subject to the terms and conditions specified, providing transfers of certain funds as specified, providing for an effective date, be enacted by the State of Wyoming.
The First Amendment for our consideration is Third Reading Amendment 27, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, as we went through the budget, both the first time and the second time, I have to admit, I spent some of my time mining for money for health care, and this is one of the results of that. Through some unknown informant on the Appropriations Committee, I found some money, and it is in the Miners Hospital spending account, and it has a lot of money in it. Well, since we did not expand Medicaid, I think primary care is one of the things that is really important that we can bring. This fund has quite a large spending account, and I was able to talk to their director yesterday, and she tells me that statutorily there are only 4 services that they can provide minors and former minors. They deal with hearing, respiratory issues, musculoskeletal issues, and cardiovascular issues. So minors who need to have those issues handled, and it's either current minors or registered former minors. What the general public doesn't know, what the minors don't know, and what providers across the state don't know, and now we're going to direct through the budget bill, is that they don't have to wait for the van to come around to test for these things. All of these services can be covered in their own community with their own provider relating to those 4 areas: hearing, respiratory, musculoskeleton, and cardiovascular. So they can go to their own physician. Now, this is not a large amount of money, and obviously we're not changing money at all. We're just telling them that they have to let local hospitals, rural health clinics, community health centers, that if their services to minors or former minors are one of those 4 areas, then the Minors Hospital Fund will pay for that. And so with that, I would stand for any questions. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Speaker, I failed to move this amendment.
Oh, you did move it, Chairman Harvey, but if you'd like to move it again just to be sure, please do.
Just for a double check, I would like to move Third Reading Amendment 27 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable aye vote.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Burkhart, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just some explanation on this. The statute mentioned in the amendment, in that statute are the criteria to qualify as a current or former minor. It's not just going in and saying, hey, I used to work at a mine and I want this service. There is a process to qualify for it, and the Miners Hospital Board has to approve those personnel. So it's not just a do what you want to do. There is a process to handle that. And it's just for those 4 services that the good chairman mentioned. But you can get those locally. And there are minors. I believe there are about 16,000 former minors scattered around the state. Thank you.
Representative Connolly, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This was one of the agencies that I was assigned on JAC to
present to the body, and admittedly when I saw this amendment, it did give me some concern and heartburn. But I've been assured that the executive director and the minors board is okay with it. However, know that there is only an executive director and two part-time employees, and now they're being asked to take on another administrative duty to assure that they give out this information. So that did give me some concern, but I understand that they are doing it and that they're okay with this.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I just have a question. The good bringer of the amendment mentioned that if we had expanded insurance for low-income folks, we would not need to expend this state money for this purpose. I just want to make sure I understood her correctly.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a couple more questions for the sponsors of this amendment, and I'm just curious if we do this here, will this be an ongoing program, or is this something that's only effective through the end of the budget cycle? Second, and if not, we'll start with these rules and regulations. When will that process begin? How long will that take? And I guess I'm just kind of wondering, I kind of like this idea, but I'm wondering if this isn't something we ought to look at doing in a regular bill and get it vetted that way to make sure we've covered this, make sure we got the people that are certified, we know what rates are being paid, and that communication is done, and maybe I don't need to be concerned, but those are my questions.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question. There was something just mentioned about 60,000 minors throughout the state that are eligible for these programs. I have written down from my notes on the original movement of this document that there were 7,500 people served. Could I get some clarification on that, please?
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was wondering if they found out anything yet when we discussed this in the beginning of the budget about the van. And at first I was understanding that van wasn't traveling around the state anymore, and then now I'm kind of hearing that maybe it still is out there. So I'd like to know some final word on that, please.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for the second time before the sponsor, Representative Burkhart?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A clarification on the numbers. Current and former minors, there are about 16,000, and that. And to answer some of the other questions, I think this would last for 1 year. It's something to be looked at in the interim, but it's a good start. And the rules and regulations are already in place on how they administer these. And there was also a question about the van. The van is still available. It's been really curtailed due to some abuses. And there are three hospitals in the state that get the majority of these people. And all this does is let the people know that they don't have to travel several hundred miles to one of those three hospitals, that they can do it locally. Thank you.
Representative Conley, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As of July 1st, 2013, there were 6,900 minors active and eligible for benefits. Each minor is eligible to receive $5,000 annually for medical and prescription benefits, and they're also eligible to receive up to $2,000 for a set of hearing aids, and that is what the administrators assure is available to each and every one of those minors.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Really good questions. Thank you. My understanding is that there are some new employees in this, full-time employees that were approved through this budget. As far as expansion, this is not a replacement for expansion, but there are former minors, the current minors, and there are a lot of them, that the current miners generally have health insurance. But so what I'm targeting is to let people know that there are funds available for them to receive primary care in those four areas in their own community. It is an ongoing program. It has been, was developed in the Constitution, and so it's been a very long time program. There were 7,005 served, and most of those were served this last year through the van. And being married to a minor, I can tell you that his hearing is great because it was tested in that van. So they do drive around, and they do testing for minors. It is active, but my point is their spending account is extremely large, and minors and former minors, actually this generally covers former minors because it's a payer of last resort. And so the former minors who have not got other ways to pay for their medical bills need to know, and the clinics who bill need to know, that there is money available for people involved in the mining industry prior, and it is a second payer, a payer of last resort.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 27 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 27 to House Bill 1 is passed. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a little bit of housekeeping. There is an additional amendment, 41, that will go in the stack after third reading amendment number 15, which, if you're on the salmon-colored sheet, is on the second page. It's actually number 20 on the salmon, or on the green sheet. Is it number 20 on there, too? Second, a third reading amendment 15, and insert after third reading in 15, third reading amendment 41. Okay, is everybody square? Okay, next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment 34, Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 34 to House Bill 1, Technical Corrections. Members, these are just basically reference errors, mistakes in numbering, or perhaps a spelling. Many of these are system-generated. They're not human error. So Section 20, the first one where it says landfills, that as a system-generated error, there's no money in the bill there for it. That should come out. Section 48, Section 51 is also system error, animal ID. Section 205, mill levy debt pledge, those are all technical corrections. If you go to the bottom of page 1, lines 3 through 9, really the language should be written a little tighter, and this is how we usually write it when we put appropriations that should be reduced dollar for dollar, and that's really the words that we're missing if House Bill 58 is repealed. So that's a kind of a cleanup and a strengthening there on what we've already adopted. Livestock's deleted on line 12. I think the animal ID's deleted on line 14 of the first page. Moving over to the second page, line 2 of the amendment, you can see it's NWCC, and it should be NWCCD. This is an addition for clarification on line 4 that we're referring in section 4 to 2014 Wyoming session law. Currently doesn't say that. That just makes it more clear. Should be a subsection instead of a paragraph in the sentence on page 111 on line 7 of the amendment. And then this language from line 9 to line 22 of your amendment on page 2 all deals with AML dollars. And really what we always have said, and we failed to in this bill, is that and it strengthens our position with the federal government when we receive these AML dollars, but the key words really are on line 18, and I think it's 18, 19,
where it says funds received from authorized grants is a key word that was missing, are redirected and appropriated, that we've appropriated them. And those are key words that need to be in the bill. And then page on line 22 should be R instead of P. That's just a mistake. And then on line 24, the reference shouldn't be paragraph C. It should be A. And so I'd stand for any questions on these technical corrections.
Discussion on the amendment. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Going to the amendment on line 3, I guess I didn't understand that amendment very well. Could you tell me the practical application of what that means?
Anyone else for the first time? Chairman Horstman.
Mr. Speaker, in the appropriation, it says, and it refers to a House bill that came through here, and it refers to appropriations that were made in the Appropriations Committee, and it currently says we appropriated $1 million and then an additional $500,000 if this House Bill 58 fails. But it should say that if it will be reduced dollar for dollar, I believe, if that, let me read that. Appropriations associated with this subsection shall reduce dollar for dollar up to $500,000 general funds and $500,000 federal funds by any appropriation in 2015 House Bill 58, if that's adopted. And so we're not going to double fund it. It's in the bill currently. The key words that are missing are the dollar for dollar. That's the key piece on that.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 34 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 34 has passed. Now, ladies and gentlemen, another bit of housekeeping. On your green sheet, after number 29, which is third reading amendment 21, after third reading amendment 21, insert third reading amendment 42. So the batting order there is third reading amendment 18, third reading amendment 21, third reading amendment 42, then third reading amendment 20. Everybody good? The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 1. Representative Summers.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment can best be visualized by looking at the cheat sheet on page 6, looking at footnote 3. This amendment restores the governor's recommendation of $25,000 for funding to the Wyoming Arts Council for an arts conference, which takes place every other year. The Arts Council runs on a shoestring, and they would like this money so they can keep the admission price to the conference low. They want to keep admission low in an attempt to attract students to the conference in hopes of fostering a statewide community supporting the arts. So why should we foster an interest in the arts? The arts stimulate creativity, and creativity is the backbone of American invention. Creativity has exploded the field of computer technologies and many industries we utilize in Wyoming. I was not blessed with creativity, and my idea of creativity is to place a square peg in a round hole with a sledgehammer. However, it is essential to the advancement of industries across the globe, and the arts are part of a diversified education which has spawned the wealth of this nation through these industries. My community has an arts council that brings dance, music, theater, and other visual arts to our community and brings those artists into the schools. This helps foster a climate of creativity in our students, and we need these statewide conferences so artists and the arts community can share ideas. Past events have been held in state fiscal years 08, 2010, 2012, and 2014, and have included two art summits, the Cultural Convergence, and an arts conference. The Wyoming Arts constituency continues to value these conferences and regards the Arts Council as a statewide convener for such events. They are requesting one-time funding to help cover the cost of the conference to allow them to keep registration fees low for the public. Support creativity and support this amendment. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Burkhart, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Everything the sponsor of the amendment said is correct, except for one thing. The government needs to stay out of the arts. This is something for individuals to do and for organizations to do. And I'm glad that you're all sitting down, because this will surprise you. I belong to two artist organizations. Okay. When we want to have an annual exhibit and conference, we all ante up the money and put it on ourselves. We don't go to a state government or a city government or anywhere else and ask for money. It comes out of our pocket, because we don't want the government involved. We don't want them to tell us what we can do and what we can't do. And that's what ultimately happens with this. Now, they can sponsor it and say it's free and everything else, but the government still has a hand in it. And yes, we charge an admission fee. If you want to see some great art, you pay your fees. I do that. I've gone to a number of art museums, and you pay your fee, you go admire the art, and it's all in the eye of the beholder. Some of it I like, some of it I don't. So the government doesn't need to be sponsoring these things and providing money for them. That's up to the artists and those people. And they can always go and find patrons who are willing to pay for their art. I've done it. So I'm on and against this. Thank you.
Representative Freeman, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've agreed with everything that has been said, which makes me schizophrenic. But I push back just a little bit. Government has always helped with the arts. You can go to the big city with D.C. behind it, and you can walk into wonderful arts places that are being funded by the government. In my own community, we have a community arts center. When I was working with nonprofits, we went regularly to the city council, and they didn't give us much, but they gave us some. This is a small amount when you look at the scope of the state's budget. So I would encourage you to be generous to the arts.
Representative Greer, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked the body to resist this amendment, and the fact is we're working under restricted budgets, and decisions are made and priorities are made, and the fact is this was an item that was rejected. Now it comes in as a request for some special funds, for general funds, excuse me, for a special purpose. And I think we're going to see some more amendments along those lines as we go. We need to look at, where are we going to spend this money? I mean, take care of our elderly, take care of our local governments, CapCon, our schools, our teachers, those types of items. You just have to put that in the back of your mind. Is, yes, arts are important. I'm not going to get in the debate whether government should be involved or not. This is just one of those items. We're being asked to sweeten the pot on something. We've got to set our priorities. And this is one this year where we're at with the budget that we simply had to say, no, that this isn't appropriate at this point in time.
Representative Halverson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in support of this amendment, even our U.S. Constitution says that the government shall promote and provide for the sciences and the useful arts. Vote aye.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Summers.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. We are trying to keep our budget in line, and I look at tranche 2 and tranche 3, and And, you know, I kind of have to shake my head a little bit. So I think $25,000 is a pretty meager amount. And I want to go back to the first speaker that pushed back against this amendment. The Wyoming Arts Council is in statute. It is an agency. This isn't about, these conferences aren't about an art show. These conferences are about bringing groups and individuals together to discuss how they can best provide services to the rest of the state as it relates to art. Creativity is really the linchpin of our economy, and I would urge you to support this amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number one to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number one has failed. Division being called. All in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Third reading amendment number one has failed. Ladies and gentlemen, a timeout here. One more. These things have got to stop coming sooner or later. Clear at the end of the list. Add at the, as the very last item on the list, third reading amendment number 43. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 7. Chairman Zwanitzer, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I'll apologize because 43 is mine, and I thought it was numbered, and it wasn't. So I apologize to the body for giving you another amendment. Second, I would move third reading amendment number 7 to House Bill 1 and ask for your favorable introduction. Members, I would remind you we are only 25 years away from Wyoming's 150th anniversary in 2040. I know many of you know how quick 25 years goes by. And we've heard all sorts of really good things about compound interest. So if we put this money away now, those of us who are still here in 25 years, which may be some of us, or at least in the state, we can say we adequately prepared and took strategic planning steps to put money away for 150th, so we have 25 years to plan it at this point. So in 25 years, we can't come back and say nobody thought about the 150th. So I'd ask you to approve the amendment. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing with the amendment, if you notice, it's just a general fund appropriation. It doesn't sit in any accounts. There's no reversion date. It can't be included in next year's budget, but what about the following years? So I would ask you to resist the amendment. It's just money that will hang there with no purpose. They'll have to account for it for the next 25 years. It would have been better to put it in an account, a sinking account, to pay for that. So I would ask you no vote.
Anyone else for their first time? Question being called. We're voting on third reading amendment number 7 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 7 has failed. Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As promised, the second half of Mr. Munger and Mrs. Munger's 8th grade civic class is here from Newcastle Middle School, and I always enjoy doing this every year, but Mr. and Mrs. Munger were both, they both teach history and civics at Newcastle, and were very instrumental in pushing my interest in pursuing a career in politics and my general interest in current events and politics and the world around me in general. So let's give them all a big welcome. Thank you.
Welcome to the House. We'll have a discussion later about his budding interest in politics. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 17, Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1, and I'm not going to really reiterate a lot of the things that I talked about in second reading, but I am going to talk a little bit about what our U.S. Senator did speak about up here at this microphone earlier about compromise, and what this amendment does. It's different than the second reading amendment, is it's $25 million less out of the LISRA. And I did give you a handout. It shows you all those constitutional funds that we have, and it shows you how much we got on our interest rates. So the value that comes back to the state from those constitutional funds as opposed to the last one on the bottom there, the state agency pool, that's where the governor has borrowing authority. So you can see on that, it's 2.09. So there isn't any difference between the LISRA and the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Fund. They're both in the state agency pool. So the risks, as far as investments and returns, are the same. But what this amendment does is it takes pressure off the general fund. If we were to pass an amendment like this for the next 4 years, this would fully fund the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Fund. And then all the ongoing projects and all the operations with the trust fund would be paid for out of the interest of that trust fund. So you wouldn't have any more general fund appropriations to that. The last thing I would want to say that I didn't mention Tuesday was in conference committee, the difference about being in conference committee as opposed to when we're doing the budget, it's seven of us against five of them. So the House has a stronger position. In conference committee, two of the members of the JAC on the House side come off. Then it's five on five. And I think this would be a good, strong position for the House to have. Depending on what they do today, and looking at what we did and what they did on Tuesday, when our five go in the conference committee, I think that there's going to be an opportunity for us to hold something that maybe is something that we feel a little stronger about than this. So it could be a good bargaining chip. But I think that it deserves some more discussion, so that's why I brought it back.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, someone asked me about third reading of the budget, and we were talking about it, and I said, well, it's just the same debates with half the money, and I think that this amendment sort of fits in that category. And, you know, the good sponsor of the amendment talks about that there is no difference in risk or return based upon the movement of these funds. So why do it, and why now? Why do it in a make really what is a fundamental change in our savings strategy and do it in the supplemental budget and not when we're talking about all our savings policies? And why take this really unprecedented step of appropriating directly out of the LISRA? What's the emergency? What is the pressing need to do it, especially when, as we discussed in our second reading amendment discussion, that this really isn't going to change probably the amount that is paid out for projects in the next biennium. What this does do, and there really can be no debate about it, is it stops growing the LISRA. In fact, it starts to shrink, an inevitable shrinkage of that insurance policy that is the LISRA. And that, again, is a step that we would take without really reaching any consensus on how much we should have in that account, without reaching any consensus about how we should continue to fund savings into that account going forward. So I would just really caution the body. This is a dramatic step. It's a dramatic step on third reading and what is the pressing need for it? What is the emergency? If you can't really reach in your own mind a conclusion that there is there's some sort of emergency that requires this dramatic action, then I would urge you to vote no.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The purpose of our liquid savings is for emergencies. But we also have to put taxpayer money to work for taxpayers. And the people who, the companies, the entities that have generated practically all of our money that's in the LISRA are the energy companies. Those are our largest taxpayers. And those companies strongly support the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. And right now, I'm sorry, strongly support the Wildlife Trust Fund. They also support the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. But right now, we are taking their money. We're taking a lot of it. And when it sits in the LISRA, it does nothing for them. So all this budget amendment does is put some money to work on a specific purpose that's very important to our leading industries. And the emergency is, if we don't take care of our wildlife, then there are a few federal hammers that will come down on our heads that will stall or stop the energy development that brings us the money. So really, this is about taking taxpayer money and putting it to work for the taxpayers. It doesn't work for anybody sitting in the LISRA. And if the gloom and doom scenario that we're supposedly preparing for happens somewhere down the road, then we can take the money out of the Wildlife Trust Fund and pay our bills, if need be. It's not a permanent fund. It's always accessible. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To note on what one of the prior speakers had said about this amendment, I am on and for this amendment, but he had noted that what is the emergency? Have you taken a look at the supplemental budget? It's full of non-emergencies. This is how government works. We fund things that need to get funded, and this is one of those items that needs to be funded. I urge your aye vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment. Being good stewards of the taxpayers' money means that we have to make decisions for the best use of the taxpayers' money. Funding the Wildlife Trust Fund has been something we've been talking about ever since I first got here. This is an opportunity to actually start doing something that we have been promising for the last 6 years. So on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, today in committee, for my first time, I had the opportunity to see exactly how these funds work. And it's pretty impressive in the breadth of these projects across the entire state and also the ability to leverage these funds from non-governmental sources to increase the ability to protect habitat, water, and air. So on in favor of the amendment.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment. We had talked about this earlier. I was really tempted to get up here and just say ditto. But good comments today. Good discussion about this. As is pointed out, not emergency, but nothing really is at this point. We are simply doing this to preserve our future, and that's what we're looking for. Preservation of our future, what our children can see, what our grandchildren can see, something to consider. Thank you.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we've decided now it's not an emergency through the testimony I've heard from all the speakers. If you just look at the amendment, folks, and then, because it pulls in the current budget, and that's what I'd like you to look at on lines 9, 10, and 11 of the amendment. And you can see that on what we did in this budget already. Okay, so on line 10 is the Wildlife Trust Projects account. That's $5 million in general fund. So given the figures that the bringer of this amendment showed you, that the state agency pools at 2%, so the $102 million in the Wildlife Trust Fund then is generating about $2 million a year. So we went ahead and put $5 million in general fund, which in effect produces enough income as if it were a $250 million account. We've consistently done that. We've said, hey, this is what it would do if it was a $200 million account. And we funded the project accounts, because that's what the trust fund should fund, is the project accounts, with general fund dollars. And you can see that $5 million. So we're actually funding it as if it were a $250 million trust fund at 2% interest. But then I want to really just talk about the money, because that's what this budget is about, and go back to SJ2, which we passed on second reading today. And that would allow then, and look at the handout, it would allow that the bringer gave you, it would allow that return on a fund like this, which I think would be the poster child for that amendment, be probably the first one that we'd vote on in this body, I would guess, and you'd allow that to go from a 2% return to hopefully a 4 or 5% return. In effect, doubling it, because currently we make about $2 million, 2% on the $102 million. And then we can go to 5%, it would be $5 million plus, as if it would be a $200 million fund. I would submit to you the very most important thing we can do is continue to fund it like we have generally funded, as if it were a quarter of a $1 billion fund, and then let's really work for SJ2's. Success. And that will, in fact, move this thing up, and it'll just continue to grow and grow. But to do this is not about, this $25 million will generate $500,000. Okay? I don't know. I mean, so it's not about the money. It's not about emergency. It's not about protecting our wildlife. Really, this is about a statement to kind of say somehow we've saved wrong, or we're rainy day, or we put our rainy day to work, or yeah, I don't know, but I would really, I just don't think this is a really dramatic thing for such a small amount of gain, if any measurable gain. And so I'd urge your strong rejection and stay with your Appropriations Committee position. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halverson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in support of this amendment, I agree with the last speaker that this is a statement. And frankly, a couple of speakers ago said this is a statement that needs to be sent to our federal wildlife partners, in that we are making a commitment to the wildlife of this state, and we can do without their intervention, because we are committed to taking care of it ourselves. Please support this amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? Any? Representative Freeman.
Speaking for a first time, for the opportunity to speak a second.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for their second time before the sponsor, Representative Byrd?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Comment made previously is exactly why we need to do this. We need to put this money in an account so we can see it with transparency to fund the wildlife. The comment about connecting it through some shadow financing from other accounts is kind of problematic to me, and it should be problematic to everybody sitting on this floor. We need to put money in accounts so the general public can look at it and see with transparency and understand what we're doing. On for the amendment.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Chairman Harshman.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I wasn't going to speak again, but then I heard the old T word, the old transparency word, and I'm going to gently push back to my colleague from the Capital City. You won't find, you know, the Wildlife Trust Fund in your goldenrod. You know, but on page 3, you flip it over, there's the LSRA. Remember all the campaign talk. Nobody talked about the $100 million in the Wildlife Trust Fund. It's the $2 billion in the Rainy Day Fund. I think everybody in the state knows that we once had $2 billion in the Rainy Day Fund. But to say that it's not transparent and that it's somehow magically moved around, I'm going to push back on that because I think that casts a cloud on this whole body. And we're sitting in, as I said, the biggest fishbowl in Wyoming. We got kids here from the Northeast, people from all around the state. I'm being recorded forever and indexed and broadcast live. And to say that we're somehow not transparent with $2 billion, that is on the website, it's on your daily report. Everybody in Wyoming knows about the Rainy Day Fund. I think it's not part of this debate. I think the real debate is, will $25 million actually do anything for this? Or should we actually maybe just appropriate $500,000 general fund to do the same thing? Or should we really work for SJ2 and really get knowledge out to people from the Northeast and all around that, yeah, I'm going to really support that because it's going to be the biggest thing we can do for the Wildlife Trust Fund. So that's what this is really about. This is an amendment that's not going to do much. And then it just pits us kind of against each other with words about transparency that I think are not helpful. And I'm going to gently push back, Mr. Speaker. So I'd urge your rejection of the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to on and for this amendment also still. I kind of get the idea that it's trying to be pushed around that maybe we're spending this money, but which in fact we're just transferring money from one piggy bank to another, both owned by the state of Wyoming, both invested by the state of Wyoming, and the Wildlife Trust Fund does that. I urge your aye vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just in response to that comment and a reminder of our discussion a couple days ago, if you think this really is as easy to spend out of the Wildlife Trust Fund as it is out of the LSRA, and that you, when we have a need, you'll just be able to dip into the Wildlife Trust Fund, bring a bill to, heck with $25 million, bring a bill to spend $1 million out of the Wyoming Wildlife Trust Fund and see what happens. You will get hammered. And that is because once you put it in the Wildlife Trust Fund, we have made a policy decision that the earnings off that money is going to be used for our wildlife. So, like I say, there's a difference between legal principles and what's reality. And reality is once we put it in, we've dedicated it to the use of our state wildlife.
Representative Freeman, for your second time.
Thank you. For this amendment, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build up a corpus to where that we can do good works. And as it's been said already today, and I won't go into it, we're able to take that money and we're able to multiply that. The average multiplier for every dollar that we put into this and that we earn on the interest is 6 to 1. We get everybody in the state that's involved in that. And by putting this money in there, what we're doing is that we are guaranteeing that we have so much money to where that we can get interest off. If we don't put that money in, there's no guarantee that comes out of that. One of the interesting arguments that has been coming up is if we put that money in, we can take the money out. And that's absolutely true. And we've also talked about how hard it would be to take that money out of the Wildlife Trust Fund. Well, we have a rainy day account, and we, at least I, have been on the campaign trail, and they're asking whenever are we going to take money out of the LUSRA. So I think that they're almost the same. And I would urge your support because good things are happening with this. And by putting that money in, that money will stay, probably more than what the LUSRA is. But right now, they're equal.
Madam Minority Floor Leader, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be brief. Long-term investments in our wildlife will pay long-term dividends. And I think that's what our constituents expect us to do. And then just to piggyback on my good colleague from the Southwest, in response to an earlier comment, from the Speaker Pro Tem. I have to say that based on our debates this year, it cannot possibly be harder to get money out of the Wildlife Trust Fund than it is to get the money out of the LISRA.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the members to answer that question, really. When was the last time we pulled any money out of the LISRA? We've diverted money from not going into the LISRA. We've not ever done it. I appreciate the debate. I think the debate has to happen, especially for the citizens of the state of Wyoming. And, it's good to have. Now, as far as the constitutional amendment goes, we've got a long way to go before we get there. The comments about moving from one can to the other can, whether or not they're going to be at risk, whether or not you're going to take it out, it's the same thing. This coffee can, that coffee can, interest rates, dividends, returns. I think it just comes down to the philosophy, which is really the conservative philosophy, I think, of the state of Wyoming. Do we want to continue to move forward with preserving Wyoming for our ancestors? Do you want your ancestors to have the opportunity to enjoy the same Wyoming that you grew up enjoying with your mom and dad? We do. And I think if that's an emergency, then we should be doing it now. Here's the thing. You want to get there sooner or you want to get there later? We'll get there. I think me and the good chairman of appropriations agree on that. We're going to get there. But I'll go back and reiterate only one thing that I said Tuesday. If you have a savings account, you got kids, are you going to keep the money in the savings account or set up a trust fund for their college education, or are you going to put the money in an IRA for your retirement? Basically, that's what we're doing here. So I appreciate the discussion, the debate. I think we had a good discussion on it. Appreciate that. So urge your support of the amendment. Thank you.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 17 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 17 has failed. I could have predicted that. All in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. More than 17. Third reading amendment number 17 has failed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 10. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 10 to House Bill 1. There is a corrected copy out there, so please grab the correct one. The first copy had a small appropriation in it after some discussions with the folks over at this particular agency. They returned some money from some previous studies. They felt they could probably handle most of this in-house with, basically internet access and phone calls to these other agencies. And what this does is, as you know, you've heard about that rare earth project in Wyoming moving forward. Some of you may not know that we have a number of gold projects in Wyoming, probably well over $5 billion worth of gold discovered resources that are controlled by generally little tiny companies that sometimes are funded really well, and during the lean years like we are right now, some of them go out of business and the properties get returned to the original owners or even returned to the state land office if it's state land, or if it's a mining claim, it becomes unstaked ground in the public domain. The data associated with these projects basically isn't collected and retained by anyone in the state. For 60 years, we've had a program collecting oil and gas data in the state. We do it very well. It's an excellent website to access data on there. I highly encourage you to go take a look at it. You can pull up pretty much any oil well that's ever been drilled in Wyoming and look at it and look at the data, and geologists can figure out where they want to look next time around. What this bill will do is just direct this particular group to go out there and look at what other states provinces and the country north of us and that island nation in the Southwest Pacific, what do they do in this area? I know some of them do collect the data, not all of them. And, you know, we're a mineral-based economy here in Wyoming. Is regardless of how much we talk about it and how much we want to diversify our economy, we're really not going to be able to accomplish that because we don't tax anything else. So if you want to have tax revenue to spend down here, we have to have a future resource base. And that's what this bill will help accomplish. It's not going to help us next year. It's not going to help us 5 years from now. But this is the feedstock for future revenue sources in our great state. So no appropriation, so I'll stop there and ask you to vote aye.
Discussion on the amendment. Question being called. We're voting on third reading amendment number 10 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Wow, third reading amendment number 10 has passed. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill 1, Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I move third reading amendment number 14, House Bill 1, ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, we had an amendment previously we spoke about on second reading that talked about prioritization, talked about priorities of the state. I think we came to the conclusion that we do have priority highways that are dealing with significant impacts. And with the rejection of that previous amendment and the advancement of the one that followed it, the statement, I think, was pretty clear. We have priorities. Let's get moving. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is part of that continuing that dialogue. And I'll just be quickly through the amendment, and then we'll get all the pushback, and then I'll close things up. This is taking $10 million from the Permanent Wild Mineral Trust Fund reserve account, taking it directly to the agency responsible for roads for use on those two roads that are already in the bill, 2026 and 59. And it is removing the tranche 3, $5 million. Thus, everybody, that was number 2, everybody moves up after that. So it's improving the odds in tranche 3 for 15 other peoples, and it's getting the roads being built quicker. So with that, I ask for your favorable consideration and look forward to a brief discussion on the priorities of safety on our roads. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think the discussion really is about safety on the roads. I think we all agree on that. We want safe roads. We've done a great job. And I think the discussion is how to pay for this item that has risen dramatically. And here's how we really heard about it in our committee. When the department comes, like the rest of the agencies, to make a pitch for supplemental requests, they told us of the massive public hearings. They had 100 people in Campbell County and 130 in Converse County, and we got to do something. And so, okay, so we said we'll do something. And they said, well, we won't be able to build any this summer anyway, because, and it takes about $100,000 to plan each one. And we thought, that doesn't sound good enough. I mean, surely there's places on 59 where, you know, you don't have to put culverts, you don't have to move much dirt, it's relatively flat, and we could get this thing going. And so we then said we want to put the planning. Yes, you said it'll take a year of planning, but we also talked about their federal fiscal year. I think there was some confusion in our committee. We said we think we can get some of these done this summer, and so we directed them to take some of these safety funds. And so really it was the agency saying it can't be done. And we said, as an appropriations committee on your behalf, we want to get this started and get going. And we provided the funding mechanism for them to do it. So this isn't about safety on the roads. It's not about timing. This appropriation, which I don't recall that we've ever appropriated out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Reserve account, we've used it as a guarantee for loans. We use it for a guarantee on the capital loan, and you'll see in the budget we're making payments on that. But I don't recall us just plunking $10 million right out of the reserve account and messing with the flow of the inflation proofing of the fund. I mean, if we're going to truly go, and, you know, we talked about Senate File, got referred to Senate File or House Committee 2 to statutorily come back with a spending policy amount. I think Chairman Revenue, I debated that ad nauseum the other night. If we're going to actually run this as a true trust fund, you can't go in and start pulling money out of the reserve account. I'm not sure 75% of the five-year rolling average is big enough to guarantee 5%. There's a real debate we're going to have on that. It's probably not. And so we're going to take part of that 75% and just say, for some reason, we think it'll get faster. I submit to you, it's not going to happen any faster. This money, we've got it taken care of in the budget. It's going to get done. It's going to, and hopefully this summer, as we directed them, and we usually don't do that, but frankly, we were a little frustrated. They say, we have all these people at our meetings, you got to do something. And my point is, you have a commission, you have a department, you have a $1.2 billion budget, why don't you do something? Who's your commissioner in Campbell County? Who's speaking out for you on this? And so it came to our committee in December, and then, frankly, we listened and listened and listened, and we heard and heard and heard, and we said, okay, we're going to act on your behalf as committee number two. So this is really this is an unprecedented move to appropriate out of this account, not loan guarantee or any of that. This is a, boom, pull money out of the reserve account, stop any inflation proofing and stop the real workings of a trust fund, and there's no need to do it. There's just no need. And so it's not about safety. It's not about timing. I'm not sure what this is about. And I think we've got this taken care of. I really do. I feel good about this. And I think your votes on Tuesday did that as well. So I'd urge you to reject this. And not go down this road of trying to appropriate out of some fund that we, to my knowledge, haven't directly appropriated. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the body about what that reserve fund is for. And if you remember what we were talking about a couple days ago, we have a spending policy amount that we have made. We've reached that spending policy with our earnings and capital gains more times than not. But the times you don't make it, that's when the reserve is there. In fact, that's the only reason that reserve account is there, is to assure that we have a spending policy that generates an even stream of revenue in good years and bad years. We don't use it to dip into, certain projects. It's for guaranteeing the spending policy amount is there on a long-run basis.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just kind of want to add to the discussion a little bit against this amendment, but the question I'll be is, why aren't 10 or 15 of these already built? Why aren't they built? I mean, YDOT's supposed to put these in line. They're supposed to be looking out for us. This isn't a problem that just popped up here this winter. It's been an ongoing problem. And we've heard about the public meetings, and it's been a problem that's been expressed. And so what happens is the department comes in and says, well, I guess we have a problem. One, they knew about it. They fully knew about it. Well, give us some general fund dollars. Well, we brought them in and sat down with them. It went through it. We said, you know what? We'll find some dollars to make sure you guys get this planning done. But why don't you have the money for this? And as we dug through it, they did have the money. And they do have the money. And that's what you find in your budget, is that plan for them to use their money to do what they're supposed to be doing. And that's taking care of the people of this state. So I don't think this is about a safety issue, because I think we all agree. I guess the real question is why wasn't this done two years ago, this last year, maybe even 3 years ago? And the reason being is because we have to come in and say, you will do it. And you will do it with the funds you have, because they are sufficient, and they showed us that they did have those funds. Instead of using this as a mechanism to try to draw some more money out of this body or out of the general fund. So don't forget. And all of us have been around for a little bit. We did pass a fuel tax as well to help them out with some of their issues, and we all bore the brunt of that. And they need to get busy and get this project done, and we've given them the mechanism in this budget to do it. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader, for your first time.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I just want to point out that we can't take money from the spending policy reserve account, which would not be my first choice for money. We can't take money from the LISRA. We've told the department to go find the money. I just want to know that there's money to build the road. That's really all I want to know, and that it will get built quickly. Again, for those taxpayers providing our taxpayer money, they need roads to drive their big trucks down.
Representative Kasparik.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I'd like to push back. This is about safety. This is about people who are dying on Highway 59. You know, we've had more deaths on Highway 59 this year than we've had in years past. It is about safety. It is about setting priorities. It is about finding the money, not just to do a study that's going to come back to three or four or five different reports to committees. It's about getting the money out there, being used, fixing the road, and saving people's lives. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for the second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Horstman.
Thank you. Just to remind everybody about the money. So $2 million is appropriated from the SLIB grant monies. It's at $3 million that's sitting out there that we pulled back, tried to reduce that fund. You remember it was line item vetoed, so there's $3 million in cash sitting there right now. We've taken $2 million of that, put towards design. That's what we were told was needed. And then we took, as you remember, the non-compliant DUI law, there's $10 million that has to be spent on these type of projects, safety, turnouts, passing lanes. And so we said, because you can still have, you know, a half-open bottle of wine corked, or you could be in the... So all that work we did 10 years ago for whatever. But anyway, don't get me in that discussion. But so there's $10 million there, and you'll read the budget minute. We said, or a like amount of state funds. If they can use state funds quicker, which we know they can quickly do this and not have to go through all the federal environmental impact statements and all those things. And so, you know, if they, and they said they couldn't build any. Well, there's enough right there to plant them all and then build probably another 11, you know, this summer. And they said they couldn't build any. And we wanted them to get going and build. Maybe we have a light fall and winter and then keep on building. And then next year, another $5 million will flow in that to finish it up next summer. That was really our plan to get that. And then we'll be here back next year. And if there's more passing lanes and we think we got to do more, we'll do more. But there is money. It's not study. That study thing we actually deleted, I think, on Tuesday because that came in as a Senate deal, and it came in the JAC. I'm sitting there listening to that. I said, we're not about studying this issue. We're about Action Jackson, and we're going to get this thing done and get moving. And so appreciate that, and I hope you'd vote no on this amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for the second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Bartle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I want to cover a few things that were talked about. So we had the discussion about priorities. We've got two major priority highways in this state, 2026, 59. There is new money. The $2 million found money, I guess you could call it, didn't get expended in the last, but in the current budget, got line item vetoed. Thank you for directing that toward this process. Appreciate that. The $10 million currently is basically a redistribution. I mean, the good chairman just spoke very, very well about that. But that shifting of money, that's probably money coming out of somebody else's community. That's saying they're taking money from another priority that maybe was in one of your communities. We don't know that. It's just you shift it around, sort it out. You got a big pot. Well, folks, it's coming from somebody's little pot. The third part, the way it's currently set up, is $5 million is coming after, at the end of our current biennium. That's my understanding of it. If I'm incorrect, I guess I'll be corrected later. So what I'm doing with this is I'm taking actual money and putting it up front. Now let's talk about where this money is coming from. Get out your goldenrod if you have it close by and are interested in looking at it. Page 5, middle of the page. Permanent Wild Mineral Trust Fund Spending Policy Reserve Account. It's right there. Under that, There's a line that says revenues, and then there's a line that says appropriations. Appropriations, 2015, JAC, recommended, Carbon County, Road and Bridge, parentheses, around $10 million. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think we heard that this has never been there's never been anything appropriated out of this account. Now, I'm not talking about that project. That may be a very worthwhile project. But, ladies and gentlemen, in fact, right in front of us, in the very sheet you're looking at, is $10 million for a road project. Ladies and gentlemen, I would submit to you, and you can find it in your budget, you can find that in your budget if you choose to look for it, I'm suggesting that there must be money in that for projects. Look at those two asterisks down there right below that. Talks about some reserve account money, $180 million after that $10 million comes out, by the way. And the very last line says, leaving $29 million plus dollars as an unobligated balance. Now, we can talk about spending reserve amounts. We can talk about all other kinds of things, folks. But my intent is to get this moving, not redistribute money from your communities toward this priority. But let's get moving. Let's get it done. That's what we do. We're spending Wyoming money on Wyoming companies and families and individuals to keep ourselves safe and moving down the road and industry marching forward. This is a match, ladies and gentlemen, the way I'm looking at it. We're taking our department to get $10 million, and we're going to pony up half of it ourselves. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would ask for your favorable consideration on House Bill 1, Amendment 14. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 14 to House Bill 1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 14 has failed. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. More than 20. Third reading amendment number 14 has failed. Representative Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We are blessed by having a good class of students from Natrona County. That's a real bad one. Kelly Walsh High School in Casper, Wyoming. They've been with us and they've heard this interesting debate about things, how we spend money. And so if they would stand, the person bringing these folks is Sally O'Brien, and she's done this years in a row, and she also invites legislators to her classes to talk about the legislation. So it's a great program. We really appreciate having them here. And as I understand it, they've got to be out the door at 11:20. So thank you for the time, Mr.
Welcome to the House. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 31 to House Bill 1. Chairman Zwanzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment 31 and will ask for your favorable consideration. The amendment before you, 31, saves our hospitals around Wyoming, brings income tax money back to our state, and helps save the lives of your constituents. I would submit that if this was purely a business decision and didn't have politics mixed up in it, we would have passed this amendment when I brought it 2 years ago. And we had that discussion at that point that it was a wait and see. Last year we did a wait and see, and we can wait another year and see, or we can take somewhere between $54 and $200 million from the feds, which is, again, is our tax money that we've already paid in that's currently going to other states, and we can save our rural hospitals from bankruptcy, improve the lives and health of our constituents. And if nothing else, just doing this for 20 months will hopefully allow some people some preventative care to reduce some long-term mounting health costs. So what the amendment does broadly is take the full 100% federal funds for Medicaid for the next 20 months for the duration of the budget, and after that, if this state doesn't agree to anything ongoing, the Medicaid expansion will go away when the feds no longer pay 100%. Let me walk you through the amendment. There on line 6, the director of the Department of Health, the Insurance Commissioner, and the governor, all three of them negotiate with the feds for a demonstration waiver under 1115. Going through this 1115 waiver doesn't affect our Medicaid benefits program in place currently. The waiver is limited to a maximum of 4 years. This is how we make it work on the contract coverage plans. And you'll see that if it ever falls below a 90% federal match, it automatically goes away, but the feds don't live up to their promises. Romanets 2 and 3 talk about eligible individuals. We're trying to get them on the health insurance exchange or an employer-sponsored group plan. If there's any possibility that these individuals can get insurance in the marketplace or on an exchange, we can give them a smaller level of assistance and help them help themselves, including premium and cost sharings. You'll see in Romanet 4 that we do, but not even we do, we shall offer a work search and training benefit in consultation with the Department of Workforce Services. Currently, a lot of this work in other states is going between the Federal Department of Labor and the Department of Health and Human Services because we don't want people sitting around and covering them. We want to make sure they're trained and they should be working. We also, in Romanets 5, we have income eligibility standards to structure to make sure there's not a disincentive. We don't want there to be, you know, what we call perverse incentives for someone to actually take less money per hour to qualify for more Medicaid or health insurance match. And I would submit to you, I've known several people who've done this. When push comes to shove, they'll take 25 cents or 50 cents less an hour to try to, you know, have a kid, have a procedure on Medicaid. And so it's certainly not my intent to allow for that, and we're trying to protect against that. Finally, you'll see on page 2, we're going to set up a reserve account. All the money we're going to save in all the current state programs, I didn't want it to be any more controversial than this already is, so we're just going to put it in an account and save the money for future use. $1.5 million of that is the state's admin share, so that'll go back to pay the state immediately. But the rest, if it goes into one of these accounts, can be saved for future days. What this amendment does, truly, is bring federal tax back, dollars back to Wyoming instead of them going to our neighbors in the south. At the current time, we're actually paying our income taxes to other states. We have at least, at minimum right now, $100 million in uncompensated care happening throughout our hospitals, and that cost burden gets shifted onto the rest of us and increased premiums on our health insurance. And where it really hurts, where it really, really hurts hard, is the Wyoming businesses and our Wyoming employers, because the cost for health care of employees is running businesses into the ground in this state, businesses in each of your communities who are required to provide health insurance to their employees. And so you all know what happens. Businesses cut employee hours, so they don't have to work. They don't work enough hours to qualify for these insurance benefits. So then the employees have to take second or third jobs where no employer pays them a full-time salary, which keeps them as what we know as hard-working poor. And actually, Wyoming, when I looked, is the second highest number of working poor who would be helped because they're not covered. We're at 71%. Otherwise known as 71% of the people who'd be covered under this expansion are working full-time or more than full-time to make ends meet. And I would submit to you it's a crazy, crazy cycle, and it's out of control. And especially with the demographics of this state, we have a large number of retired, somewhat more wealthy people, and we have a large number of young poor workers who are doing multiple jobs in the service industry. Thank you to the baby boomers in this room. I understand why the businesses have to go this route. They have to stay in business, right? We're already the highest insurance premium state in this country. And yes, a lot of that has to do that we only have two major insurers in our state. And there's a lack of competition in our state's marketplace. We all know it. And we've tried to address that issue several times in previous sessions of this body. I think four or five in my tenure here. And I would submit to you, we failed. We failed year after year in how to manage health care in this state. And by not accepting the short-term Medicaid expansion, I think we're, again, failing our citizenry. And it's always an oddity that you all know, who've been here for a while in public policy, that sometimes our citizens don't understand the benefits, or the, I should say the many facets. They don't always understand the many complex facets of public policy, and sometimes they ask us to vote against things which actually would, in fact, benefit them and benefit the state. So I have tried to keep this amendment very simple. Some of you may say we're doing policy in the budget, but all Medicaid expansion ever really was needed was a simple budget amendment. But because of politics, we've now spent $200,000 or $300,000 in the state and studying it for 2 years and haven't gotten anywhere. But I would ask you all to seriously consider voting for this amendment. For those of us who've looked at the numbers and spent the time, it simply just makes sense. Outside of all the politics and all the hyperbole out there, this pencils out for Wyoming. And it pencils out so darn strongly in our favor that it really makes absolutely no sense from a business standpoint or a business perspective to keep saying no. Continuing to deny any type of expansion, it's costing us. It's costing us in every aspect of our lives in the state, in our businesses, in our healthcare, in our taxes. It's costing us greatly. And yet we remain stoic as things keep falling apart out there in our state around us. So I do look forward to a good debate. Hopefully I can answer some questions at the end for some concerns you may have. I found it profound this morning when the minister said that we should have a reverence for the truth and we should seek the truth. And so hopefully we'll have some facts and figures and some numbers that make sense to this body, and you can see how this would benefit even in a short period for 2 years while it's all a federal program. And then if it's this body's desire to do away in 2 years, I certainly think the other side of this building would strongly be able to resist any further ongoing if we didn't get a better plan back from the feds. So I don't see that as an issue. But be happy to start the debate and the discussion, which I think is needed in this chamber. We didn't have it, and I think a lot of you want to have it. So let the fun begin.
Representative Baker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that I necessarily want to debate the merits of expanding Medicaid. For me, I'm opposed to the idea, but one of the main legs that this amendment stands on, I believe, isn't really valid. This idea of the trigger that we can somehow back out of expanding Medicaid in the future. I think there's a number of states that have gone through this process and have attempted to back out at certain levels, and really what they're finding is that the trigger doesn't exist, because once you expand Medicaid, all that new population becomes old Medicaid. So the only way that you can ever get out of expanded Medicaid is to move forward with cutting all Medicaid services. So it's my understanding that the director at the national level can give a waiver, but there's nothing binding by law about that waiver. So a new administrator comes in at the national level that administers this department. There's nothing binding to him. So he can take away that waiver that he's just issued. So for me, you know, I've had discussions with many people in this body about this, and this idea that there's a trigger that somehow we can back out of expanded Medicaid, it just in my mind, and I think that there's evidence to show it, is not true.
Representative Wilson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would answer just to that previous statement first, is that there is a difference between the state Medicaid plan and a waiver. They are two separate things, and that's why we have very carefully crafted this to be a waiver. I have the NFIB versus Sebelius decision on my computer, and you can come by and look at it if you like, but I do disagree with the previous speaker. I just want to say that I'm on and for the Amendment 31. And I will say my initial response a couple of weeks ago was, no way am I voting for this in a footnote, because we've had many discussions about not doing policy in footnotes. But as I thought about it more, I realized that our main complaint about policy in footnotes is that giant ideas show up in seven sentences and they haven't really been vetted. That is certainly not the case with this issue, because we've been discussing it and working on it for years. So I decided that my objection to the footnote really didn't do justice to the depth of the study that's gone into this. So I just want to go over a little bit of my own evolution. Back in 2012, when I was running first, one of the articles on my website was an article pointing out all that was wrong with the ACA. Because, frankly, as a former healthcare administrator, I think there is so much wrong with the ACA, I would be humiliated to ever have had my name on that piece of legislation. I agree with everybody who thinks that that's a bad bill. That said, that doesn't mean we refuse to function when there are poor laws in place. We just function the best that we can under them. The next step came, 2 years ago, we were all very concerned about, gee, we don't want to pass something and then yank it away from people. And in that interim, I was invited to share that point of view in a group of people here in this town who are working with mentors to get out of poverty. And there were people that came and said, well, this would be the Medicaid expansion, and I was the lucky person who was tasked with explaining the legislature's position on why we wouldn't expand Medicaid. So I articulated the position of most of us, which was that we didn't like the idea of expanding a program and then several years later, as most of us thought would be the case, taking it away again. And one of the women in the room stood up and said that she had serious hip problems, she hadn't been able to work, and she would really appreciate health care insurance for 2 or 3 years if it went away then, because she could get her hip fixed and go back to work. And it really occurred to me that in a lot of ways we're rather treating this population as children, as unable to understand that sometimes we have short-term grants. We deal with short-term grants here all the time. I don't think it's that difficult to say, hey, you know what, you might be able to get your health care needs met for a couple of years, and then it might go away. And the vast majority of those people are going to say, hey, that's great, I'll take a couple of years. So I really felt that I moved on from that. That gave me a whole different perception on it. So I just want to, I did pass out in your box, or the kind staff has passed out on my behalf in your box. I even was so extravagant as to use yellow and red squares in there, so you should be able to find it pretty easily. The main issue that is being brought to our attention first, just from a practical point of view, is the situations of the hospitals. So our state hospitals are redistributing between $100 and $200 million a year in uncompensated care. That's charity care and bad debt. And I will say that that's, I think much of it is the consequence of a change that was made back in the 80s when I worked in a large hospital in a city that was later hit by a hurricane. And the law was changed such that hospitals cannot turn away people who show up and say that they need care in a bad way. So if you owned a restaurant and the law was passed such that people who came to your restaurant and ate, and you couldn't ask them until they were done eating if they could pay, and then if they said they couldn't pay, they would just walk away and you could try billing them. You know, you got to kind of think that maybe that restaurant wouldn't stay in the black for very long. And that's pretty much the same situation that's happened over the last 30 years or so with our hospitals. So if you look at the chart, what I have done is color-coded all the hospitals, and this material is from the federal government. It's not something that our local association made up just to pull the wool over your eyes, as I think is somebody's opinions. I apologize for the second item where the CA fell off. I have the first column shows the name. The third column shows their operating margin before any taxpayers' contribution. And then I color-coded them. So those that are in the red on operations have a red rectangle. So if you might go down and see where your local hospital falls on that scale, half of the hospitals certainly are in the red on operations. The yellow ones are ones that either are breaking even or maybe by a couple of percent ahead. And those of you that own a business might say that, you know, a 2% margin is not a really great margin. Most of you would be a lot happier if you had a 5 or 10% margin. So the only ones that are really thriving are the ones with the white rectangles. Then the next column you can see what is the government or district contribution, ranging from 0 to 16 million a year. That's in 1 year, by the way. And you can see that total local government contributions for hospital districts or county commissions is about $40 million a year. So when we wonder what has happened to the cities, towns, and counties, and how come they don't seem to have that much money, maybe $40 million a year to prop up their hospitals might explain some of that. And then the last column shows the percentage of the households in that county below the federal poverty level. And I have just put that for you on the right-hand side so you can see what that is. Because one of the things I'm really trying to do here, in addition to encouraging you to vote for the amendment, is give you the tools to take back home and talk to your constituents with to explain however you vote on this. So if you'll see in the box on the right, a person who makes minimum wage and works 31 hours a week is making a little over $11,000 a year. A person who is fortunate enough to have a 40-hour-a-week job at $753 is making a little over $15,000 a year, which would actually make them eligible for Medicaid. So this is the person that you're thinking about. I went on the exchange to see what, if you weren't getting insurance from your boss, what would you have to pay to buy health care insurance? And that's about, you can see with the subsidy there, but if you didn't have the subsidy, which if you're below 100% of the federal poverty level, you're not eligible for the subsidy because you don't make enough money to get the subsidy. One of the reasons why you can say the ACA was obviously not written by anybody that knew anything. So if you multiply $640 times 12, you've got about half of your annual income to spend in premiums. I really suggest that you try going home and talking to the percentage of your county in poverty and look them in the face and tell them how you think they could spend half their income on a health care premium. I suggest that you'd have to manage your money pretty darn well, and I don't think I'd be capable of doing it. So I will pick up the pace here a little bit, but I really feel that you need to be able to go home and talk to your constituents about this issue because we haven't really discussed it over here. So we've got the vast amount of dollars that the hospitals are spending. Local taxpayers are picking up $40 million of it, and really the balance is covered by overcharging other people who are sick and insured. And that's the real thing. Well, when you say hospitals are covering it now, what we're saying is rather than having this be distributed among all the population, the best way to pay for poor people's care when they're sick is to make other sick people pay for it at the hospital. That's a rather small group, and I'm not sure that's the best way. The couple of answers that I've heard in response to this are one, and the first one is perfectly valid. The federal budget is insanely in debt. I mean, I admit that. That is true. We've heard that. We had the balanced budget convention bills and all that sort of thing. That's why I think it's a good thing that we've put a time limit on this, because I do see this as a short-term answer before we think of something else. But face it, you know that federal budget is not going to get fixed in the next 2 to 4 years. We need to work with what we've got. Right now, looking through our 15-16 budget, the state, through various agencies, general fund, monies that come in, other agencies that have commissions, we take about $2 billion a year in federal money. Okay, $2 billion. If you look at the amendment, we would appropriate $54 million for the expansion. That's less than 3% of all the federal dollars we spend in the state. So when we say we don't want to take any more federal money, what we're saying is we like the $2 billion we have now. We just don't want less than 3% more. And I would submit to you, just looking around, in the Department of Education, we have $231 million in federal funds. So one of the tools I'm giving you is you could go back to your constituents and say, I don't want to spend federal dollars on health care, but I'm glad to spend four times as much federal money on our children's education. I thought we didn't like spending federal money on our children's education. That's a choice, and that's I'm just laying out the options for you so you can discuss this with your constituents. I've also heard the idea that the best way to do this is not to help the people, but to give a lot of money to the hospitals. We know elsewhere in this building, we're thinking of spending $5 million. So $5 million on a $100 million problem. That's sort of like the roof is blowing off your house and you go out and buy a new bucket. I don't know that I'm going to vote for that bill. I mean, that just seems kind of crazy. And if you pay, let's think. Let's suppose you have a diabetic person who's got a couple of kids and drives a truck at low income. And were you saying rather than spend money to get that person primary health care while he's at home, we'd rather wait until he goes into diabetic shock, ends up at the ER, has his leg amputated, and buy him a prosthesis, and then reimburse the hospital for their expense? Folks, that does not make any sense. That doesn't make sense in terms of what the man needs, the patient, what his family needs. It doesn't make sense in terms of efficiency. That is not an efficient way to spend money. Just the last thing I want to say is, I have heard some people say that it's not our responsibility. And I know we spend money on a lot of things. Many of them don't seem like that great things to spend it on. I think that we can certainly argue that this is our responsibility. In the Wyoming Constitution, we founded a state hospital. In Article 7, Section 18, it says, such charitable institutions as the claim of humanity and the public good may require shall be established and supported by the state. It says, it's the duty of the legislature to protect and promote health and morality of the people. Now, I admit the morality maybe we're not doing so good on lately, but we have in the Constitutional Article 16, that says we shouldn't spend on individuals except for the necessary support of the poor. I'm not an attorney, and I'm not going to argue the Constitution on that. But I think that it's not that hard to say that maybe we do have some responsibility. We've authorized county hospitals. We've authorized hospital districts. I would suggest that we should just spend money, public money, in the most efficient way possible. So, friends, I have, again, two ways that I think you can go back and talk to your constituents this summer. I think you can say, we'd rather take our $2 billion of federal money in other areas, including education, and we'd rather spend our money inefficiently. Or you can say that we have a problem, and the short-term solution, until we can come up with a better solution, is to expand Medicaid for the short term, come up with a solution more to our liking, which admittedly will cost more money, but we're okay with that. And so I would suggest that the most sensible response to those is to vote yes on this amendment.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. On and against this amendment, I want to start off by pushing back on the idea that I heard suggested a little earlier that citizens do not understand the many facets of this issue. To say that is to say that they haven't listened to the wall-to-wall coverage that has been ongoing for several years now. I think also, with that in mind, everybody in this room probably has a firm idea, because I'm sure have been asked about this for many years in a row, of how you're going to vote. I do think for that reason I'm going to follow an old adage that I learned, that you stand up, speak up, shut up, and sit down. The four S's. And so I'm just going to say this very quickly. I believe, first of all, there's an ethical issue. We've received promises that Wyoming would be reimbursed 90%, first 100%, then down to 90% for the expansion enrollees, who are generally able-bodied adults. But currently Medicaid only covers 50 to 70% of the cost of current Medicaid recipients. and they are truly the neediest individuals by anyone's standard. And that's a terribly backward situation that would be created. And I think that the feds should take adequate care of the current program before they look to expand it even more. And secondly, I believe that that very fact demonstrates that Medicaid expansion's basic intention was to entice the states into a trap with the promise of federal money and then spring it on them later. And thirdly, it's an unsustainable model for hospitals to be forced to serve more and more people and not be properly reimbursed for that cost of care. For example, if you owned a store and you were forced to sell a product for 60% of its cost, which is roughly what Medicaid would pay, you would find that your store would not be able to sustain itself for very long. Obviously, it's going to try to defray the cost to other individuals at first, but we're already seeing that many of these small hospitals are losing money currently. So now we're going to add to the problem, adding more customers who are not paying what it costs for you to purchase the products in the first place would only speed the demise of your local store. And then ultimately, Medicaid expansion seeks to saddle states with a financial decision made in our nation's capital, not in our state capital. And that's a decision it has no business making. I, for one, believe it's time for the state to stop this demolition of constitutional federalism. A century full of these handouts from the nation's capital have eroded the idea of our 10th Amendment, and I believe it's destroying us over time. And it's for these reasons I appreciate the hard work that has already been conducted over in the other body across the way to stop this encroachment of federal government. And so it's for those reasons that I'm going to vote against this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. I'd just like a little better explanation on this colorful red and yellow chart that we received. If I look at it, of the counties that are, or the hospitals that are in areas that the poverty level is in double digits, it shows we have seven of those that are in double digits. Four of them are doing extremely well based on the description as they're in the white. Two of them are still in the yellow, so they're still above water, and only one of those double digit poverty levels areas is actually in the red. To me, that indicates more of a hospital mismanagement or management issues of some sort than it does a Medicaid issue here. And so I'd just like a little bit better explanation how that really pertains to a Medicaid issue. This chart certainly doesn't explain that very well to me. As I said, it shows that our poverty level counties are doing better than our non-poverty level counties.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you so much for that question. Going back to the chart, yes, there are double-digit poverty households, and there are two of them in the same county, and they are privately owned hospitals. So the second column is just as important as the third column. These show what hospitals have some government assistance, either through a hospital district or they are county memorial hospitals. And so as you look at those, these county memorial hospitals and the hospital districts were set up because people chose to tax themselves to build a hospital or to maintain a hospital. And so some of these very low-income counties do have, that if they're privately owned, they have economy of scale. They have a better opportunity to recruit doctors. They have a better opportunity to buy their services and products. They have better benefits because they have a bigger company backing them up. And so it really what this chart is demonstrating is not success because you're in a poverty level county. It's that there are hospitals that chose to tax themselves to build and maintain their hospitals, and without that taxing district or the ability, and you can see there's one of them in the red, that is a county memorial. It's the 8th one down. It's a county memorial hospital that has tried to install or to vote for a hospital district, and that district continually gets voted down. And yet they do receive money from the county commission. Now, given the discussion about cities, towns, and counties funding, how long do you think they're going to be able to maintain that level of support for the hospital? So it's everything is intertwined, but truly the ones that are doing okay are the privately owned, or they have critical mass. They have more people. They have the economy of scale. But if you look at the ones that are in the highest double-digit losses, even though they have county support, they're very small hospitals, and they have less economy of scale. And you can go down. There's two hospitals. There's one that's 27% in the red, one that's 20% in the red. The one that's 20% in the red, they compete very strongly across state lines. So a lot of their patients go across state lines, and still they don't have the support they need to be able to do this. Hospital districts are struggling, and they're looking for a lot of different ways to gather revenue. And so this chart really tells some story, but it doesn't tell the whole story, and that's why I wanted to let you know that a lot of this is economy of scale, and it's tax support outside of billing. Thank you.
Minority Floor Leader Throne. I guess we're going with Vice Chairman Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just had some questions that, as we've studied this over the last couple of years, one, as we heard that 71% of the of those that would be affected by this are currently employed, and we've repeatedly heard that that was around 59%. It's a significant number, and we was getting this from the Department of Health, and I just was kind of curious where that number come from. And then on the amendment, I was also curious. Normally, 1115 waiver is a 5-year waiver. I guess it doesn't have to be, but typically it is. And I was wondering if there was a reason for that. I think that there's a trigger maybe in 2019 that the federal cost goes down again or it ends. That was the end of the Medicaid expansion, and we really don't know what is going to happen from that point on. Maybe if we could get some clarification on that. And then down on Romanet 5, where it says, initial and continuing income eligibility standards shall be structured to avoid creating disincentives for a beneficiary to increase that beneficiary's household income. In what we've come to call the SHARE plan, there was, we looked at breaking the folks that this Medicaid expansion would help into two groups, 0 to 100%, and from 100% up to 133%. And we've consistently said that those that were 133% of poverty would have to have a premium or a copay, or a premium and a copay, and that those who were 0 to 100% would have a copay to have some skin in the game, which for many of us is kind of an important thing. Just a personal part of that. But the benefits for those two groups was the same, so there's no incentive for the ones that was paying the premiums. They was getting the same benefits as those that weren't having to pay premiums. And so if down there on 5, if we're talking about eligibility standards and structured and that, I would really like to have a little more definition of or idea of what is intended there. How are we going to structure this? Who's going to be? What are the bands there of who's going to be eligible? And is there, or are we just going to leave that up to the Department of Health? And I think that that's an important question for the members of this body to ask, because if we leave that decision up to the department and we don't like it, then, well, there you are. You know, we're going to have to live with that. And so maybe a good thing, may not be a good thing. We've had mixed throughout the departments. We talked about some highways today where we thought that the department could do a little better job. I think we have good departments in the state, but this body likes to be involved in a lot of that process and deciding particularly how that money is going to be spent and to what degree. And so maybe as the presenter of the amendment comes back up, he could address a little bit more of that if he would be kind enough to do so. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. And I'd like to thank the previous speaker for his questions that really get us into the weeds. And I'm so glad that he's bringing us there. And that's because what I'd like to do before there's the opportunity for answering those questions is to bring us back up to that 40,000 foot view. We're talking about the budget, and we've been spending time and a lot of time, as we should be, talking about the general fund and the BRA and the SIPA and the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and spending accounts and how we're going to be moving money around. And those are hard conversations that we're paying attention to. But to me, this is the hardest conversation that we need to have. And this is the reason why we're here. And this is what takes true leadership, is to be able to have this conversation. This is our obligation to think about our responsibility to those who among us are the most vulnerable. And that is our most complicated conversation. That's our hardest conversation, because those voices are so rarely heard, so rarely heard, right? We don't have spokespeople very often on this floor who take up that banner. And again, for as difficult as it is to talk about moving all that money around, it's far more difficult to talk about the most vulnerable and our responsibilities. And so hearing that we were having this discussion on the floor today, the director of our downtown clinic sent me a quick and incredibly long email, which I won't tell you everything. But in it, she talks to the services that are provided in my community to some of our most vulnerable. And just so that you know, only 4 communities in the state have a downtown clinic like I do, and that there are 3 other community health centers. So we're talking about 7 community health centers that treat our most vulnerable. The rest don't. All right, the rest don't. All right. Although the information that she gave me and talked about was who comes to the downtown clinic. All right. Who comes? All right. Half of the folks who come to the downtown clinic, who must be at 133% of the poverty level or lower. All right. I mean, we're talking about our most vulnerable. Half of those folks work. Right? Half of them work. They work in fast food or other kind of restaurants, home health care, house cleaning, and seasonal construction for the most part. The other half don't work. They don't work because they're too sick, all right, and they're too sick and unable to get the care that they need, which is typically a surgery, all right, but because they're not Medicare eligible, they're not getting that surgery and they can't work, all right. They have mental health issues. Right, they have mental health issues, and we've started to talk about the importance of taking into account our mental health needs. Or they're caring for someone else who's sicker than they are, right? Those are who our most vulnerable are, right? We right now take care of, as one of the previous speakers spoke about, someone who goes into a diabetic coma, right? They go to the hospital. They are cared for. Hopefully they survive it. But then what happens? That person goes to our downtown clinic, for example, right? and has to figure out how to take care of all of that kind of complicated medication, right? And typically with a low education. All right? That's who Medicaid expansion would cover. Those are our most vulnerable. That is our most difficult job. Not only that, it makes fiscal sense. All right, the second reading amendment that we had yesterday, that was for $198 million, right? Took care of the uncompensated care at our hospitals, and only 1 year of a lowest level bronze plan health care insurance program for 13,000 individuals. It's fiscally prudent for us to do Medicaid expansion. But more importantly, it takes care of what I think is our hardest obligation, to think about and care for our most vulnerable. So on and in favor of this amendment, and thanks to those who brought it.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. You know, this is really an excellent debate, and I'm thrilled that we're actually discussing Medicaid expansion in what is the people's house, because it really is about people and about helping people. And I've had many of you ask, why do you want to spend the time on this issue? Well, sometimes even an onside kick works. And I feel bad bringing up that example given that the good representative from House District 7 is a Packers fan. But I think it's an important issue. It's worth discussing. And I want you to forget your email. I want you to forget maybe some of the handouts you have in your box, and just pretend you're starting fresh with this issue. If I came to you and I said your local government organizations support it, including that organization where a lot of the members still wear large cowboy hats and cowboy boots, that they all support this issue, if I told you that your local economic development people support an issue, if I told you a statewide business alliance and the large employers in our state support an issue, and if I told you it saved state dollars, substantial state dollars every year while it's in effect, I think you would all jump on the bandwagon. It's a no-brainer. It makes perfect sense. That's what, all of those things are true. Local government supports it. I personally am the member of two business organizations that support it, one of which could only be described as a conservative organization. My economic development people want it. My constituents want it. So what are the objections? And just to give you a few examples of the state dollars that we could save. Earlier today, I didn't want to burden the color copier, but I emailed you all the pie chart of our general fund expenditures. $957 million in 15-16 goes to the Department of Health. It's 26% of our budget. And several times during the budget discussion yesterday, the burden of the Department of Health was mentioned. Medicaid expansion reduces Department of Health expenditures. No one can refute that. Our Department of Health has done study after study after study. And why would that happen? Because we have assorted safety net programs at the Department of Health. Prescription drugs, diabetes prevention, mental health and substance abuse. A lot of those programs would be covered by Medicaid expansion because they go to cover the uninsured. It saves state dollars. I could run on saving state dollars for the next 20 years and be assured of re-election. This is a totally defensible position. We save state money. As already been mentioned with the excellent chart from the representative from House District 7, our communities need this. The local hospital is in my district. And so all I have to do to think about why this matters is look out the window from the speaker's office or my office upstairs. My hospital needs this. And why do the counties care so much? The counties care because the counties have a statutory obligation to provide charity care. That's why our counties care. They pick up the bill. And in my local hospital's case, one of our county commissioners has said, right now we happen to have a large foundation, so our hospital is okay. They can continue to absorb some of the uncompensated care. But that won't last forever. And then, as my county commissioner wisely points out, it will fall on the taxpayers of the county. It will fall on the taxpayers of the county to pay the bill. Then there's also the business argument. My insurance, the insurance that my firm provides our employees, the insurance that all of us provide state employees, is higher because of the uncompensated care. It costs more money because those costs of the uncompensated care get shifted to the employers who buy the insurance. They get shifted to the paying patients. That's a fact. That is a fact that cannot be refuted. It's also a fact that everyone sitting in this room has paid federal taxes. I paid mine. I'm sure all of you paid yours. These are our federal tax dollars that we are not taking. We have information that shows taking this money could create 800 jobs in the state of Wyoming. And again, I'm just left with the only sensible solution is Medicaid expansion. Saves money, saves lives, saves dollars. Now, the arguments against Medicaid expansion that I've heard are frankly don't hold a lot of water, in my opinion. First of all, I've heard that people will become dependent on the care. Well, I'm here to tell you that this class of people is already dependent on charity care because, as I said, the counties are obligated to provide it. But it's cobbled together expensive charity care that doesn't get them the preventive services that they need. The good representative from House District 7 mentioned diabetes. Well, I have a real-life story to tell you that a friend of mine from the northern part of the state shared with me the day the Senate killed Medicaid on their side. That very afternoon, there was a man in Campbell County with diabetes, not old enough for Medicare, but uninsured. And he had stopped taking his insulin because he couldn't afford it anymore. Well, they had to rush him to the hospital that afternoon because he was in insulin shock. That's what happens to real people living real lives while we argue about taking money or not taking money because we don't like the federal government and we can't trust the federal government. Real people have real crises, easily preventable crises, if we took the Medicaid money. It's the right thing to do. It is defensible on so many fronts. We're sent down here to do what we can with the information we have to make the lives better of the people around us. And I can't predict what the federal government's going to do, but I know that this is our money that Wyoming's entitled to, our money that will help people. And I think it's time that we take this money. If we take the money, it's not going to add dramatically to the federal debt. The federal debt's huge. Whether we take it or not, there's still going to be a federal debt. And we could give back our $2 billion. But really, just fundamentally, I think the public is behind us on this now. Maybe the last two years when we debated it, they weren't. But I feel strongly that the public is behind us. It's a defensible position. And I know I'll have a second time, but I think I'll finish with this quote because I think we've had a lot of debate. Last night, I went home and To Kill a Mockingbird was on TV. And I love that book, and I love that movie. And I reread the book every time one of my kids has to read it in school. So I've actually reread the book in the last few years. But there's a great scene early in the movie. I'll admit I didn't make it to the end. I fell asleep. But I have seen the movie before. There's a great scene at the beginning of the movie. It's Scout's first day of school. She had a really bad first day of school. She got in a fight with a guy named Walter Cunningham, who was poor. And she got in a fight with him because he wouldn't accept money from the teacher to buy his lunch. Anyway, so she gets in a fight, she gets in trouble, and has a talk with Atticus, her dad, that night. And Atticus says to Scout, "First of all, Scout," he said, "if you learn a simple trick, you'll get along a lot better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb inside of his skin and walk around in it." I am guessing that most of us here have had health insurance, have had health insurance for most of our lives. I have always had health insurance. Even in my wild world traveler, see the world student days, I had health insurance. But there are people out there who don't have health insurance. They have to choose between insulin and food. But I have had the experience of really needing health care. And it was expensive. And it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to save my life. And I think that just because somebody is working hard and doesn't make enough money to cover insurance is not a reason to deny them what all of us enjoy, and that is good health care. So put yourselves in the skin of someone who doesn't have health insurance and ask how you would vote. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. The comments from the good representative from District 13 about our most vulnerable really struck me. And I would ask us to remember as we debate this subject just who are our most vulnerable. And remember for whom Medicaid was originally intended. Poor children, impoverished seniors, and individuals with disabilities. As Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act enrolls childless, able-bodied, working and working-age adults, enhanced federal funding applies only to this new class of enrollees. States do not receive an enhanced matching rate for those truly vulnerable. And I would urge us to remember also that the ACA and its companion Medicaid expansion is largely funded by $500 billion stolen from Medicare. This is called, it's even got a name now, Medicare theft is what it's called as in the discussions around expansion. There has been no evidence, and this is from a national financial magazine. There's been no evidence that Medicaid expansion has created jobs in the states that have already expanded. A foundation that has studied this issue found that despite hopes, losses to hospitals for charity care and bad debt have increased under Medicaid expansion, not decreased. Further, the number of uninsured has not changed. Everywhere Medicaid has been expanded, the number of new enrollees has far exceeded projections. If we take Wyoming's projections of the number that's most often used, 17,600 new enrollees, and bump it up conservatively to 22,000, almost 20% of Wyoming will be on Medicaid. This cannot be sustained. There's a governor in a southern state who gave a speech when his state was considering expansion, and it had to do with money going to other states. He said, it's 100% false. Medicaid is an entitlement program, and therefore there is no fixed amount of federal Medicaid spending to be reallocated from state to state. Unlike certain infrastructure grants, states that choose to participate do not have the opportunity to receive extra dollars when other states decline to participate. He further went on to mention that every dollar we refuse to spend on Medicaid expansion is $1 less that we have to borrow from China, not $1 that goes to another state. So much of this is based on theory. Very good, smart people get around and develop the theory that Medicaid expansion will do this or save money or create jobs. But they are not dealing with the reality of what hits the ground. And as a matter of fact, I won't go there. I would urge your no vote on this. Thank you.
Representative Dayton.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. I'm on and for the amendment. And I won't take much time, and I know you've heard people say that. You know, it's kind of like the checks in the mail. However, I do promise you I'm only going to make a few points. This body and the one across the hall has spent a lot of time and energy the last few years on this subject. But what I'd like for us to do today is stop blaming programs or the nation's government for what we think may or may not happen, but focus on the facts and do what we are here to do. That's pass legislation that helps all the people of Wyoming. Medicaid expansion would lower uncompensated care in all hospitals. Don't you think that would help all of us? It would help people get preventative care in clinics and relieve overuse of our ERs. I really encourage you to pass this amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Kasparik. Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. On and against amendment. You know, we've studied this for not just the last couple of years, 8 years, 10 years, a long time. I've been a nurse a long time, and I never questioned who I was going to take care of, or I wasn't going to care for this person or care for that person. You just take care of it, and that's what our hospitals do. And to a large extent, that's what our doctors do. They just take care. We have been shifting costs in health care
for all of the years that I've been in nursing. And this little experience and adventure into supposed healthcare reform is not healthcare reform. Now, we can kick this can down the road a little bit longer. We can give hospitals a little bit more money for a few more years from a borrowed promise from a federal government that has an $18 trillion debt. Or we can really get serious and talk about healthcare reform. We can talk about pharmacological reform. Research for new drugs costs money, and they shift that cost to the insurance companies. And we need insurance reform because they shift that cost to now a much smaller bucket of people than they could before because of ACA, and they shift those costs to those few people to get as much money out of them that they can to cover all of the other people that they're trying to cover. The hospitals shift the coverage. You know, they know that they're seeing people who aren't going to pay their bills, aren't going to be able to pay their bills, so they increase what they say the cost of health care is, and they shift that to an ever-growing smaller bucket of people who pay larger fees. And it can be sometimes as high as 400% markups. You know, so we're shifting this down to a very, very small bucket of people who are going to be able to spread this out. Let's take a step back. Let's not go down the road that some other states have gone and are now trying to get out. There's a state to the south and to the east of us that a few years ago was the poster child for an innovative approach to Medicaid expansion. A few weeks ago, their governor and their legislature announced that they're on the two-year plan to get out of it. They would get out of it today if they could, but they can't. They can't find, you know, that hard pressure to just knock people off the rolls. You know, they're trying to find a way to get them off in a two-year plan because they know they can't sustain the cost and the growth of Medicaid expansion that's happened in their state. Another state that just expanded this year has already seen costs and enrollments in excess of 33% more than they anticipated. And most states that have expanded have found that too. This isn't a fix for what is wrong with our healthcare system. We can talk about it, and we need to talk about it, and we need to give it more time than we have, you know, kicking this can down the road. We need to talk about tort reform. We need to talk about insurance reform. We need to talk about spreading risk across state lines. We need to talk about things that have to be done at the federal level and things that we can do at the state level. But I promise you, we will be back here in a couple of years hearing the same stories from the hospitals that are going to get just a little bit of a kick for this year if we expand this. But they're going to be in the same problem next year or in 2 years. This is not a fix. This is not where we should be heading.
Representative Croker.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. I think we've probably all made up our minds by now, so I won't really add much to the debate, but I would like to say that I've received a lot of emails on this issue on both sides of the fence, and I think all of us have, and so I think that whenever we have an issue that many people care about, we have an obligation to have a recorded vote for those people to see, so I would like to call for the ayes and the noes.
Is there anyone else for their first time that would like to speak on this amendment? The seconds? Anyone else for the second? For your first time? We haven't finished the debate yet, so for your first time.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Majority Floor. Yeah, thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. I'll be brief too, because I served 4 years on Labor Health, and when I came off that committee was the time we started the Medicaid cost study, and I was put on that task force. And then that was the same time we were going through the change in governorship. Well, in those 4 years I was on Labor Health, we had a doctor that was the director for the Department of Health, and when we elected a new governor or chief executive, he thought that director ran the Department of Health like a hospital. So he hires a city manager to run the department, and he wanted it ran more like a business. So to move on, then I go on to JAC. That city manager comes to us with this business plan of his to show how the state can save billions of dollars. And at that point, the chief executive rejected it. And then there was another election this past year, and now he's for it. So I think we're starting to see some progress. But the only other comment I would make to put a face on this was we talked about federal taxes, and I got my W-2. I got my W-2 from the state, and I got my W-2 from my company. And I think me and the representative from House District 39 are probably the only two people in here that are in ERISA plans, multi-state plans. And we're actually seeing, for those Cadillac plans, lower rates and lower premiums. And I'd like to be able to see that for everybody. But in my state W-2, what we make as being legislators, that kind of puts us in that Medicaid expansion group, you know, that area between 135% and 138%. So think about what was said earlier. Could you live on just your legislative salaries, pay all your bills? I think most of us probably are in the six-figure salary. We're kind of a privileged class in this body. And that actually gives you an idea of what the people we're talking about in this group are doing. They're not frail. They're not fragile. They're not looking for handouts. These are people that are working. Probably two jobs. So that's just something else for you to think about when you put a face to who's actually we're talking about helping here.
Representative Edmonds, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this has been a lopsided debate. I think everyone's minds are made up. But to balance it out a little bit, I would just remind the body that from the conservative point of view, I believe we're on the cusp of victory. And this is no time to go wobbly and embrace socialized medicine. You know, we fought this battle for years now, and the way leftism works is to create a problem and then offer the solution and reap the benefits of power and bureaucracy and control. And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing this, we have this problem now. And this was created by socialist ideas. And now the solution is more socialism. The only power on earth that can push back against the federal government and these sorts of things is the states. And the states, some have been standing strong, and some have been succumbing. Now, the issue at hand here is whether Wyoming will suddenly succumb, which makes no sense at all. Wyoming, of all states, is in an excellent position to resist this, to stand tough, and to provide some leadership to the other states. We've got a Supreme Court decision coming soon. We're not sure how that will go, but the solution to all of these problems, as near as we can get a solution, is to have the free market resurgent, and to get rid of the misnamed Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. Once that is gone, we can begin rebuilding the private sector solutions that will address the health care crisis, if that's what we want to call it. So speaking for the members of the Labor Health Committee, well, I'm not sure if I can speak for all of them, but many of us think we was robbed when this was pulled out, that we didn't get to vote on this issue. And so I'm very glad it's come to the floor, so at least we can do that, and I'm glad we're counting the ayes and noes on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone else for your first time? For your second time, Minority Floor Leader Throne.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. Just a couple of quick points that I neglected in my first remarks. First of all, I don't think any attorney responded to the legal question that was raised, so here I go. The Supreme Court found that states had the option of not taking Medicaid. So I think it's fair to say that under that Supreme Court decision, if we want to withdraw from Medicaid, the only thing that's consistent with that Supreme Court opinion is to allow us to withdraw. We also know that the federal government has told other states in written form, they've sent letters, that if they want to withdraw from Medicaid, this Medicaid expansion, they can. So speaking as an attorney, I think the federal government, under this administration or any administration, when they've written states and told them they can withdraw, I'd go to court on that in a heartbeat. Would be a very easy case to win. Supreme Court case, agency in agreement, we can withdraw. Want to respond briefly to the good nurse from Campbell County. She raises a lot of good points about the broken healthcare system. Well, I didn't see a bill with all of her ideas in it. And we know that if we were to do it the Wyoming way, it would cost close to $200 million a year. And we know we don't have that money. And also, this isn't a perfect fix to our healthcare problems, but we can make it better. We can make it better for our budget, we can make it better for our communities, and we can make it better for a huge number of people in Wyoming. There's not a single issue in front of us that has the potential to improve the lives of this many Wyoming citizens in a direct way. And finally, with regard to whether this is just a socialist plan, I guess I would point out the good words that from the Wyoming Constitution that the representative from House District 7 read when we began. I don't really think our founding fathers in this state were socialist. And that I would also point out that a prior legislature, I don't know the year, passed a statute requiring our counties to cover charity care. And I don't think this legislature has ever been, nor will it ever be, a socialist body. On and for the amendment. Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Representative Baker, for your second time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just briefly, because I know we're all getting tired and we want to have lunch and move on, but when the executive downstairs writes a letter, there's really nothing binding about that. That's one person writing a letter. And to me, that's the same thing that goes forward with these waivers. It's a letter. And my understanding is, and I know I've had discussions with this, is the only way that that letter becomes law is it has to go through the Regulatory Administrative Procedures Act to become law. The executive downstairs can write letters all he wants, but until we have a law, there's really, there's nothing binding about that. So I don't know. I'd take issue with it and, just keep that in the back of your mind.
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsors? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. Is this on? Very briefly, I would urge this body to learn from the experience of the states where this has been done. Nothing has worked out as planned or projected or theorized. Enrollment is way up. Charity care and bad debt are going up. The uninsured, no change. And the truly vulnerable, as state health departments look to cover the charges that were not foreseen, the truly vulnerable have seen cuts in the services that they truly, truly need. against the amendment, I urge your no vote.
Anyone else for their second time? For their second time. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Folks, I feel my bill coming up in Senate appropriations, and so I'll be really fast. I'm going to treat this as if this were a normal bill on which people were actually still wondering and just answer some questions. There was a question brought up about the wisdom of having a program expanded where it pays below cost. That would be correct if the people that would be covered are now paying full cost, because obviously then there would be a decrease in money to the hospitals. But the fact is that those people right now are paying zero. So 60% is better than zero, which is why the hospitals are for this. There was a question about the white rectangles on the chart. And one of the things that I would point out is just, if you consider the areas where those white rectangles are, you will note that many of those communities have large state institutions in them or near them, filled with state employees who are insured, whose insurance is paid for by us. And we all remember that the best way to take care of your uncompensated care problem is to shift the cost to a big pockets insurer, who is us. There was a question about the difference between 59% and 70% employed. I don't know for sure, but I would hypothesize that that's the difference between people at 100% of the federal poverty level and 133%. That makes sense to me if you think of the bell curve. There was a question about the design incentives in Romanets 3, 4, and 5. Yes, certainly if we had had the bill here, there would be more explanation in it. We tried to kind of trim the verbiage to fit it into a footnote format. We talked about Medicaid projections going up, and that, you know, that is very true. In some other states, the enrollees have increased over what they projected. Interestingly, in Wyoming, I think that we have a different situation. Many of these other states have very large urban areas with, frankly, undercounted poor people in very urban areas. We really do not have that demographic here in Wyoming. So, and we have, for the people who are working and at a higher level, we have pretty good jobs, and we don't have that demographic. And as a matter of fact, in some of the areas where they, when we several years ago did our woodwork projections here, we are actually seeing fewer than projected in the woodwork. So I think that gives me some encouragement there. The second to last thing I want to just say is that line about the truly needy. And I certainly support all of work that we have done for the people with developmental disabled. That is a good work, and those are good things. The elderly people in nursing homes, those are all true. One thing you may not realize, for example, is that people on the DD waiver, individuals themselves are eligible up to 300% of the federal poverty level, and there's no restriction on the family income. I myself know families whose household income is well over $100,000 a year who have a child with a mild disability, and they are receiving Medicaid money. So I'm not trying to set up a fight between who is more needy, but I think that to say that a person with a mild disability living in a household of $100,000 a year is somehow more needy than a schizophrenic single person who can't work, I don't think that we really are thinking clearly about what this population is like. Just the last thing I want to wrap up, we talked about the waiver. My personal preference when I wrote a bill was to have the waiver at the four-year level. And I'll tell you, I do think that I hope the ACA will be repealed. I do think, unlike some other people, I do think that monies will be chopped back, and that's why I favored that length, because, I mean, I really did the political years, okay? We got two more years of a particular administration. From my political perspective, if we have all branches with my party, I think that this could be, entitlement reform could begin, and that gives us a year or two before they put together bills to bring this back down. I mean, that really is my thinking on it. But I think that those people who said, until the ACA is repealed, we should do nothing. Until there's tort reform, we should do nothing. Until there's insurance reform, we should do nothing. I don't think that's a wise decision. I think we should do something, Medicaid expansion, for a short term, work our butts off in the interim, unlike we have maybe not done in America for the last two decades as far as solving the problems. Come up with a better solution. That's fine. That would be great. But I don't think doing nothing until we solve the problem is a very wise choice. Thank you. On and for the amendment.
Having the ayes and nays called for, Chief Clerk, will you call the roll on third reading amendment 31 to House Bill 1?
Allen. Aye. Baker.
No.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay. Gay.
Excuse.
Gay excused. Greer. Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kasparik.
No.
Kirkbride.
Excuse.
Kirkbride excused. Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup. Patton excused. Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Pinnell.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Excuse.
Mr. Speaker excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Harvey? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? Petrov? Aye to no. Are there further changes? The vote is closed. 15 aye, 41 no, 4 excused.
Third reading, Amendment 31 to House Bill 1 has failed the House. Majority Whip?
Madam Majority Floor Leader, I would move that the House beg to rise and sit again in 1 hour at 1:45.
We are at recess until 1:45.
You want some committee announcements, Madam Chair?
It would be an honor to have committee announcements.
Thank you. Your committee number 7, Corporations, is going to meet immediately in room 302 to talk about election code revisions, Senate File 54, and the Telecommunication Act, Senate File 43, and hopefully be back in an hour.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The conference committee on Senate File 13 will meet Monday morning at 9 a.m. in the House Judiciary Room H8.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. Labor will meet tomorrow at noon recess in room 302 to hear Senate File 115, Discrimination.
Vice Chairman Blake.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today, room H17, to hear the following two bills. Senate File 97, Department of Transportation, Communications, Facilities. Senate File 95, Speed Limits.
Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet Friday, 15 minutes after noon recess, to discuss Senate File 8, Education Accountability.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in room H18. And we will consider Senate File 65, Savings and Loan Associations, and Senate File 17, Resident Contractor Material Preference.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Revenue Committee Number 3 will not meet tomorrow because of a scheduling conflict. So the same two bills, Senate File 124 and Senate File 122, will be discussed at 8 o'clock on Monday.
Vice Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. For those still here and still paying attention, your Travel Committee Number 6 will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., to hear House Bill, Senate File 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, and 134, Bighorn Sheep Plan. Thank you.
All right. Enjoy your lunch. Sure.